The Preston and Steve Daily Podcast is presented by Acme. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors, and the official supermarket of MMR's Preston and Steve Show.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast. And now, Preston and Steve's news updates with Kathy Romano.
Today is Thursday, August 15th. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning. In the news this morning, a gunman surrendered early Thursday morning following a standoff with Philadelphia police that lasted more than 7 hours, leaving six officers shot and three others injured. It started sometime around 4:30 Wednesday when police attempted to serve a narcotics warrant at a home along the 3700 block of North 15th Street in the Tioga Nicetown section of the city. Police officers entered the house, and once in the kitchen area located towards the rear of the residence, gunshots rang out, authorities said. The shooter fired multiple rounds. Officers returned fire, many of whom had to escape through windows and doors to get away from the barrage of bullets, Philadelphia Police Commissioner Richard Ross said. Two police officers remained trapped inside of the home for hours. However, at about 9:20, police said that the officers were safely removed from the home. Richard Ross spoke to reporters this morning, and they're not quite sure that the shooter knew that they were inside the house. Apparently there's going to be some more details that'll be released later. The gunman surrendered to authorities shortly after midnight Thursday after speaking to his attorney. 34-year-old Maurice Hill was taken to Temple University for evaluation and was released a few hours later to police custody. Hill has a long criminal history of drug offenses dating back to 2003.
It's pretty wild because as this was unfolding, Steve, you brought it to my attention because you had seen it on the news before I did, and the initial information that was coming in, after this all was wrapped up, I was shocked to find out it was just one guy. You know what I mean? There were six officers shot, I was thinking, all right, it's a group of people that they're standing off against.
He was in the back of the house.
I was surprised.
Yeah, had the ability to sort of pick them off. And I heard six officers shot. And then later heard that, no life-threatening injuries. I was amazed and so happy to hear that, because you hear six people shot.
Yeah, somebody's gonna get hurt bad.
Yes, seriously.
It was just astonishing.
Yeah.
But from the nature, I guess, and they're going to obviously do extensive checking up on the situation and laying out how everything played out. But from what they said initially, the guy was, it was sort of a bottleneck situation, and then he barricaded himself in towards the back of the house. And Kathy, on the second floor, I had heard that they were the two officers, and they might have had two people with them as well.
Yeah, I think that he made a comment. Ross made a comment this morning that made me believe that there were other people in that house.
They had arrested, that they found up there. Did you hear anything further on that?
I don't know about that. Okay. I know that there was a woman and a daughter that were brought to safety, they said, but they weren't saying whether or not they were inside the house. Maybe they were, a neighboring house. I'm not exactly sure. But he did say this morning that, he was at the scene and that they were, they were obviously working all night, and that somebody else is going to come and give more detailed update later this morning.
Now, he was also Facebook Live.
Yeah, he also didn't. So Richard Ross also didn't. He wasn't exactly sure about that, but apparently there was some sort of conversation with a girlfriend, and there is also a newborn. I'm assuming it's the suspects.
Yeah.
But again, they're going to update, all this information and how it unfolded later today. So as the standoff began, patrol cars were seen speeding towards the scene as armored vehicles and police in tactical gear converged on the street. I was driving at about 4:30, and police cars all over the place. I was driving into the city. I'm like, something's going on here.
Yeah.
And I didn't know at the time. And when I got there, I was actually talking to Alex Holly from Fox 29. And she was like, hey, did you hear? I'm like, that's what that was. That's they were all over the place.
What I thought was fascinating is that there was local and there was national news covering it as well. And so what they did is any coverage that they did was very removed from the area because they didn't know if the shooter was able to watch and see tactically what the police were doing.
Yep.
Yeah, in fact, I was watching ABC and they were like, we're purposely staying back.
Right.
Because we don't want to give anything away. Yeah.
So video showed one officer who appeared injured being taken away in a police car. Another video showed two officers carrying a man and putting him in the back of a police car. In another video, bullets can be seen ricocheting off the pavement around police officers positioned outside of the home. Police said the six officers shot in the incident were rushed to area hospitals with non-life-threatening injuries. All have since been released. In addition, three other officers who were not shot received treatment for other injuries. One officer who was injured in a car crash while responding to the scene of the shooting remains hospitalized. This morning, Commissioner Ross spoke to reporters and said they are celebrating the work of everyone. It's a miracle that no one was killed during this incident yesterday. He said the crime scene will be processed in more detail, and more detailed update will come later today. The threat of a recession doesn't seem so remote anymore for investors in financial markets. The yield on the closely watched 10-year Treasury fell so low Wednesday that for the first time since 2007, it briefly crossed a threshold that has correctly predicted many past recessions. Weak economic data from Germany and China also fanned fears of a global shutdown, a slowdown. That spooked investors who responded by dumping stocks, sending the Dow Jones Industrial Average into an 800-point skid, its biggest drop of the year. The S&P 500 index dropped nearly 3% as the market erased all of its gains from a rally the day before. Tech stocks and banks led the broad sell-off. Retailers came under especially heavy selling pressure after Macy's issued a dismissal earnings report and cut its full-year forecast. Investors have been plowing money into the safety of the United States government bonds for months in the middle of growing anxiety that weakness in the global economy could sap down in the United States. A stop for water ice just made someone in Philadelphia $3 million richer. A Pennsylvania Club scratch-off ticket worth $3 million was sold at Germantown Water Ice on the 2700 block of Germantown Avenue, the lottery Pennsylvania Lottery announced yesterday. For selling and winning
I live right near Germantown, Kathy.
Do you know where Germantown Water Ice is?
I'd probably pass it.
Okay.
I probably thought to myself, man, I bet you they sell winning lottery tickets.
For selling the winning ticket, the Water Ice shop receives a $10,000 bonus. The $3 million Pennsylvania Club scratch-off is a $30 game that offers five top prizes of $3 million. To determine if they've won the prize, players can review the ticket, scan it at a lottery retailer, or use the ticket checker feature on the lottery's official app. No information about the person who won has been released. Winners should immediately sign the back of a ticket, call the lottery, and file a claim at the nearest lottery office. In sports this morning... JT Realmuto hit a grand slam. Bryce Harper hit two home runs, and the Phillies beat the Chicago Cubs 11-1 in Charlie Manuel's first game as hitting coach.
They did it!
One day, that's all it took him.
Yeah, one day. He's
turned it all around. World Series fever, baby. Yeah.
Manuel was back in his old dugout exactly 6 years to the day the franchise icon managed his last game for the Phils. The man who created the phrase hitting season heard Charlie Chance after Realmuto's grand slam made it 10-0 in the third. Cole Hamels, the 2008 NLCS and World Series MVP with Manuel's team, was roughed up in the first game in Philadelphia since he was traded to Texas in July of 2015. Hamels gave up 8 runs and 9 hits in 2-plus innings. The series wraps up tonight. Drew Smyly will get the start. Game time is at 7:05. Before the game, right-hander Jake Arrieta announced that he will likely have season-ending surgery because of a bone spur in his pitching elbow. He is scheduled for an MRI today, and he will determine his course of action afterwards. It seems probable Eagles head coach Doug Peterson won't play Carson Wentz at all this preseason, including tonight's game in Jacksonville. The Eagles will hold joint practices next Monday and Tuesday with the Ravens, then face them at the Link next week. The preseason ends with the Jets at the Meadowlands on August 29th. And that's what I have for you this morning.
All right, thanks, Kev. Nick was just showing me the video of Harper hitting that home run. Minute hit the second tier deck.
Yeah.
I mean, he crushed it.
Yeah, it's nice to see him getting some hits, man.
Yeah, I know.
You know, it's
you almost need those things, don't you?
You kind of do, yeah.
Especially when you're spending that kind of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyhow, welcome, friends, to a Thursday morning with the Preston and Steve Show. We have several things going on today. As I mentioned earlier, our Belly Flop Championship is taking place. Valley Forge Casino Resort. And I think we're looking great for the weather. We will be at the Valley Beach Poolside Club. And the doors open at 5, so it's happy hour time, folks. And it is free of charge. If you're at least 21, you can come out. We'll try to get things started around 6-ish.
Yeah.
And
to be respectful of everyone's time, because we have actually more competitors than we've ever had.
Battle of the sexes.
Yeah.
The ladies are on board for this one. What will they bring?
Who the hell knows?
Let's find out tonight. Come out and join us, and we will have a good time. I do guarantee you, no matter who wins or loses, we are going to have a good time. So we'll see you there. We will all be there. We also have now Casey last second here is whipping up together. I know. Once again, we have this awesome Avengers Endgame prize pack to give away like we did the other day. And it does include a $1,000 Best Buy gift card. Woo! So we're going to do yet again an emoji code.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is Casey is putting one together right now.
It's done, guys, and I think this might be the easiest one yet.
Oh. Well, I requested an easy one because last time was a little bit more difficult, but not too easy, right?
Yeah. Listen, here's the deal. You have to go to the website to see it when it's up there, and you still have to be able to call
in.
You're
right.
You know what I mean?
It's still a crapshoot.
There's still some hoops that you need to jump through.
Yep.
But
hoops, there it is.
All right, so Marissa's getting that ready. We'll have it up. I'll let you know when you can go to PrestonandSteve.com and see it. But essentially, you just decipher the code, and then later on, Wes, get a call with the answer. And if you are that person, you win. Not only a $1,000 Best Buy gift card, but also we're going to give you the limited edition Avengers Assembled Steelbook and all four Avengers films on digital, 4K, Ultra HD, Blu-ray, all that stuff, and we'll be good to go. So that is exciting. We also have joining us this morning comedian John Roy, who's going to be at Helium Comedy Club starting tonight and through the weekend, so we'll spend some time with him. And we also got to touch on the fact that today is the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. 50 years
That's
ago.
That's pretty wild.
Today,
wow.
That,
yeah.
That started. So we can touch on a little bit of that.
We were all there.
Yeah,
it was amazing.
My dad was there.
Are you serious?
Yeah. He was in Janis Joplin's tour bus.
That's right. He did.
He was banging Janis Joplin.
She performed there.
Yeah. In more ways than one.
Yeah, apparently.
All right. But I don't think it happened there.
But you do have a story?
Yeah, it's a little one, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, she performed a solo on Kathy's dad.
Nice. All right, well, we'll get to all that good stuff in due time. What do you want me to do?
It's up.
It's up.
Oh!
The emoji code is... I mean, we should have some special music or something like
okay.
that, if you don't mind.
I can totally do that.
Yeah, it's right there. So, all right. The emoji code has now been posted. It is at PrestonandSteve.com. Get to work on it. And then just wait for us to tell you when to call in, and we'll see if you can win. So, good luck to you, my friend. Let's take a break. Come back in a second. Roll out all the entertainment stories that I've slaved over for you. And a stupid question with some giveaway stuff, too. So we'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us.
Like what you hear? You can see it, too. Check out Preston and Steve's Daily Rush on Xfinity On Demand.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
All right, so stupid question time. We're going to give away a pair of passes for the Keystone Comic Con Geek Out at Keystone Comic Con. It's August 23rd through the 25th. Tom Holland's going to be there from Spider-Man Far From Home. That is correct, on the 25th. So we'll give you tickets if you can answer this question. In the game of cricket, what is a player who excels in both batting and bowling called?
Okay. Right. My guess is unknown.
215, well, maybe here.
Yeah.
215-263-WMMR. What is a player who excels in both batting and bowling called? 215-263-WMMR. Let's see if you know the answer.
When we went to Jamaica for that mystery trip years ago, Casey, you and I were reading, I don't know if you remember this or not, but we were reading the sports page because in Jamaica they care about cricket.
Oh, yes.
And it was like reading a foreign language. That sport is so...
It's huge.
Huge, yeah. but foreign to me. All the terminology, I had no idea what they were talking about.
I watched it for a little bit. I forget what channel was. There was some tournament, and I got caught up in it a little bit.
Really?
Caught up in trying to figure out what the hell was going on.
Yeah, okay.
I couldn't figure it out. I've watched it before. Yeah. Have no idea. But let's see if you know. Call now. We're going to go through some birthdays today, Thursday, August 15th. While we're waiting your answer, Jennifer Lawrence has her birthday today, and she is 29 years old today.
She's getting married and returning to acting, right? Took her a little hiatus is over. That's the word.
Yeah. I don't know what project she has in the works, but yeah, she's getting back to it.
Did you see her last film? I guess was it Red Sparrow? Was that what it was?
I watched it.
It's kind of wild. Yeah, it's another one of these super empowered spy things, but she...
There are other ones that I like
sexual.
Better.
Yeah, I mean, she uses her sexuality a lot more.
Is it weird that Silver Linings Playbook didn't really do a whole lot for me?
Oh,
I know
really?
People really fell in love
I
with
loved
it, but
it.
I wanted to like it, but it just didn't speak to me. But I'll go back and
no,
check it out.
I think
sometime.
It's a good movie. I think it's good. I don't think it's astonishing, but I enjoyed it.
She is 29 today. It's also Ben Affleck's birthday today.
Wow. Yep. Best Batman ever.
Ben Affleck turns 47 years old today.
I am looked at, so I have a huge statue of Ben Affleck as Batman up in the corner of my room, pressed it on a fake ledge that my brother-in-law built for me. I'll get into the specifics later on. Uh-huh. But every night I look up and there's Ben Affleck looking down at me.
Oh,
I really enjoyed hearing Kevin Smith talk about repairing in the relationship with Affleck.
And they really had a strained one, and he was able to bring it back around. It's very cool.
You know what I wouldn't mind seeing, but I haven't heard anything, any rumblings at all, would be a sequel to, because they leave it open at the end, a sequel to The Accountant.
Yes, they're working on it.
Are they?
Yes, they're working on it. I enjoyed that movie that came out of left field.
Yeah. Which is weird, because I used to not like him.
Yeah. I would do that too.
I didn't like his acting style or any of that. And then it wasn't until it had to have been The Town, that the bank.
It wasn't
movie.
Sheely?
It was definitely wasn't that one. But that was the one where I was like, okay, you know, and I do enjoy him as Batman. He's my second favorite Batman. Yeah. Christian Bale's my favorite.
Yeah. Argo kind of brought me back around on him too. He's 47 today. Joe Jonas, one of the Jonas Brothers.
Is he your favorite Jonas Brother?
He's the only Jonas Brother I know. No, who's the one who married Sophie Turner? What's that?
Nick
Jonas did, yeah.
And that, he's your favorite?
So he's got to be my favorite because he scored Sansa Stark. And I'm wearing a House Stark t-shirt today.
There
so.
You go.
But Joe Jonas is 30 years old today. There's three brothers, right?
Yeah, okay. Joe, Nick, and Kevin.
There's a fourth, Goober.
No.
Goober Jonas.
Wow. They're in town next week. I think they're the
Wells
Fargo Center. Yeah, it's at some point this month.
I love the song Sucker. I came across kind of like you with BTS, Steve.
I know.
It came up on Saturday Night Live.
You don't ask
like,
for it to happen, it just does.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I'd like this song.
Wait a minute. Suck her?
Yeah. No, Sucker.
Oh, like, Suck her. Now that's a song I can get behind.
Are you
a
sucker for you?
Whose birthday is it today?
It's Joe.
He's the one who's married to Sophie Turner.
Oh,
Joe
yeah.
Jonas?
No, yeah, Nick's married to Priyanka Chopra.
Yeah.
My bad.
Joe's your favorite.
Joe's my favorite.
Yeah. Hey, how tall is Sophie Turner?
I'll look that up.
Don't know.
Because she looks like she towers over the brothers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that. I'm not into Nick with Priyanka Chopra, or whatever her name is, Priyanka Chopra.
I like Chopra.
I watched her. I watched some of that show. It's terrible.
Is it?
It's not good. I thought it was terrible.
It's not good.
Yeah.
That's your John, isn't
that
it?
That was my John, yeah.
That show? No, it was the Jonas Brothers.
No, it was the Jonas
Brothers. Preston, you know that she would drink wine and talk with her friends about it. She told us in her commercials.
John.
Yeah.
All the time.
She was a huge fan.
All the time. And the third brother is Kevin, Case.
I said that.
You were right.
Kevin
yeah.
Yeah. Come on. I know.
And Goober.
But like, Joe does a beautiful duet with.
Oh, my God.
Do you guys ever see Camp Rock 2 with the chick?
No, I haven't.
Dude.
I have
you
to see
are
it.
Missing out.
Is
Camp
it better
Rock,
than The Descendants?
It's different. You know,
right.
It's
about
not
high
as
school
fan,
musical.
It's not as fan. It's. I think it's better than High School Musical. I do.
Okay.
I do.
They're in town.
Agree
on,
to disagree.
They're in town on Sunday, Case. You can go see him.
Oh,
but he
man,
did a beautiful
I'm
busy. Duet.
Yeah.
With who?
I can't remember her name because I got like 3 hours of sleep last night.
Okay.
I'm so tired.
You're getting fussy.
I'm getting a little fussy. She's really pretty. She was sober and then she wasn't sober. Now she's
That's
sober
everyone
again.
In Hollywood.
Demi Lovato.
There we go.
Demi Lovato. Yes.
All right. Joe Jonas is 30 today. Pat Priest, Marilyn from the Munsters.
Which Marilyn did we have in studio?
We had Pat Priest, I believe. Yeah.
Did we?
Yeah.
Okay.
We did, and she was involved with Elvis for a little while.
She's 83 years old today. Wow.
She was not the first. The first, I forget. She was only for half a season or three quarters of a season, and she had a boyfriend that she decided she wanted to go back to her hometown and be with, and that was it.
Okay.
Enter Pat Priest.
Then you have Deborah Messing from Will and Grace.
Nick hates her.
Why'd you play that?
I don't know.
Okay.
He's tired.
He's really tired. Preston.
She's 51, and then the last birthday I saw is actress Natasha Henstridge.
Species.
You remember from Species. Yes, that is correct.
The whole nine yards, right?
She's naked a lot in Species if you're a fan of naked science fiction.
51 years old today. All right, let's see if we can get an answer to the stupid question. What is a player who excels in both batting and bowling in the sport of cricket called? 215-263-WMMR. And I'm going to go to Eddie. Hi, Eddie. Good morning.
Good morning.
Eddie, so if you're good at bowling and at batting, what do they call you in cricket?
All-rounder.
An all-rounder. Oh. Yep, hang on. We're going to set you up, buddy. We are going to take care of you with a pair of tickets for Keystone Comic Con. You got a Keystone Comic Con August 23rd through the 25th at the Pennsylvania Convention Center on August 25th. See Tom Holland, star of Spider-Man Far From Home. Keystone Comic Con is so much more than a Comic Con. It is an exciting weekend for the whole family. You can get tickets at KeystoneCon2019.com/tickets. Well, bad news. Bam Margera is behind bars after getting nabbed by the LAPD at 11:56 p.m. Tuesday night. I assume he's out by now because this was on Tuesday.
What happened to the rehab?
So according to Page Six, well, he was placed under citizen's arrest and then booked early Wednesday morning. He reportedly was busted for trespassing shortly after leaving a rehab facility that Dr. Phil had helped arrange for him. He reportedly refused to leave the Lux Hotel on Sunset and caused a scene.
Did you watch the video?
Nope.
Yeah, he's sitting on the floor in the lobby, and he's refusing to move, and the police take him away. Now, he was in rehab for, a day and a half? He got Dr. Phil tattooed on his neck, the name Dr. Phil. Did you see that as well?
No.
So there's a whole bunch of stuff going on, and everyone's really worried for him.
Well, I was going to say, this doesn't sound like this. Obviously, he was on something or drinking or whatever. It doesn't sound like somebody who was sober.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah, I think he was. In fact, Phil had commented. He had said his bail was set at $1,000, and Phil said he doesn't need a lawyer to get out. He was trespassing. I don't know all the details, so I better not speculate. He's allowed to get out on his own. He was drunk, so they're going to let him sober up, and then he can leave on his own when they say it's time. That's all I truly know. So that's what Phil said. But I wonder how much is this. I mean, obviously, the booze is a huge root of the problem.
Yeah.
But also, I wonder how much of it is, you know, sometimes, bam, under situations where somebody says, well, hang on a minute, wait, you know, you can't do that or something like that. He doesn't react too well to
being told no.
Yeah, I think sometimes.
Part of it, though, I on that first go-around, he came in here, or maybe it wasn't the first, but it seemed to be a lengthy stab at rehab. He was good, and he was committed to that. You remember all that had to happen for Steve-O to get where he is today, and he's a miraculous turnaround. I only hope the same for Bam, because this is not clearly a good place for him to be at right now.
Yeah.
And it's only going to get worse.
Yeah. So sources told TMZ that he's off his bipolar meds, which triggered this latest strange behavior. I don't know if that's legit or not. But
Case, have you ever heard him that he's bipolar? I've never heard that.
No.
Yeah.
In fact, I mean, this whole Dr. Phil thing, you know, he was talking about how he's not crazy.
Yeah.
And Dr. Phil said he's not, you know. I don't know.
Who knows?
I don't know. This breaks my heart.
Yeah. It's very sad. No.
Yeah.
All right, but let's go over to the Kardashians. I'll break your heart some more.
Yeah.
Actually, no. This is a positive thing. Okay, so they're not known for their natural look, which makes Kourtney Kardashian.
That's not natural?
Kourtney Kardashian's latest bathing suit, hot shot, even more notable. The 40-year-old mother of three posted a swimsuit shot of herself on Instagram, and fans are embracing not just the sunny Italian setting, but the fact that she opted to keep her stretch marks in the picture.
Oh my God!
What about her pubes sticking out the side?
How
he is so brave.
Brave is that, Kathy?
So
thank you.
So brave.
That's the word I was going to use.
Look at you.
So brave, showing your stretch marks.
Yeah. And yet you always hear about kids a chop, kids a chop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She responded to one of her fans in the comment section writing, "I love my little stripes," adding a smiling emoji. So.
Oh, my God. The stripes meaning the stretch marks.
Yeah. I only wish she loved her little shut the F up.
Bella Thorne, the actress, has gone from Disney star to porn film director.
No. There you go. It's the usual trajectory, Preston.
The 21-year-old directed her first porn film.
Oh, this is real.
Dubbed Her and Him as part of Pornhub's Visionaries Directors series.
I'm not familiar with this part of Pornhub. Are you, Preston, or is your friend who checks porn?
No, I've never heard of this, which features debut films by unexpected guest directors to diversify porn production and help create more varied content with multiple types of viewers in mind.
Wow.
The film depicts, quote, an edgy 20-something guy who stumbles upon a surprise text in his girlfriend's phone, interrupting their morning routine and spinning everything into an out-of-control sexually charged encounter.
Wow.
That's according to the Pornhub news release. Her and Him is also being billed as a sexually explicit Romeo and Juliet. Thorne said, I'm really lucky.
Really?
Romeo and Juliet. Dear God, they're really saying that. Thorne said, I'm really lucky that Pornhub wanted to come on and produce this with me, because originally I was shopping it around a very long time ago and things were very different. People are kind of scared to make a movie like this one when it comes to dominance and submissiveness between a male and female and how this relationship can turn quite sour.
Oh, no, they're not. That's so much of porn is populated with stuff. There's nothing they haven't done. So this isn't virgin territory. You'll forgive the pun.
Two of the stars are Abella Danger and Small Hands.
Those are the stars? Mm-hmm. Bella Danger and Small Hands.
Small Hands.
Wow. And I am not familiar with their work, Preston. Basically theater stuff before this?
And Chest Rockwell.
Chest not Rockwell. Really.
Remember that from Boogie Nights? Yeah.
How much can you bench?
Music from Mod Sun will be featured. That's Thorne's ex, I guess.
Oh, why is she using music from Mod Sun? They had a tumultuous split.
I guess so. Is that a person?
Yeah, and he's okay. An idiot.
Her and Him is set to debut September 11th at the Oldenburg International Film Festival in Germany. Don't forget, it's the Romeo and Juliet of porn.
Is it Romeo in Juliet or and Juliet?
Yeah. What boner through yonder window breaks. All right. Mike Tyson this week said he and his podcast co-hosts smoke around $40,000 worth of pot each month on his California ranch where he grows cannabis.
Wow, that seems to be a lot.
Yeah.
$40,000 a month? How many people are joining him in that?
Eben Britton, his hot boxing with Mike Tyson co-host, added, we smoke 10 tons of weed on the ranch a month.
That seems biologically impossible, doesn't it? Yeah. To smoke 10 tons of weed?
Do you know what hot boxing is?
No, I have no idea.
You remember that term, hot boxing?
Yeah, and do it with all the windows up and...
Oh, okay. No, I was heard when you puff on the joint too much and it gets all, you know, burns too quick and gets all hot.
Oh, we called it
called hot boxing.
Yeah, so you close the windows and it would intensify. We also called
it
the aquarium.
The aquarium.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, my friends called it that.
The former boxer broke ground in California earlier this year on a 40-acre ranch. He added that his ranch sells around $500,000 in cannabis to dispensaries in California and Nevada.
It's proving to be very lucrative.
Each month. And he's been involved in the pot industry since after his last fight in 2005. So he's been with it for a while.
That would seem impossible. That's an ungodly amount of pot, right? For just a couple people to...
They're exaggerating.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. A musical about the life of Princess Diana is Broadway bound. Directed by Christopher Ashley, Diana is scheduled to open at New York's Long Care Theater next March. And it follows the line of the People's Princess the life of the People's Princess during her turbulent 15-year marriage to Prince Charles, culminating in her 1997 death at the age of 36. She will be played by Jenna DeWall in this.
Huh.
From the sounds of it, Diana, which debuted this spring at the La Jolla Playhouse in San Diego, takes a few cues from Evita, which, of course, is about Argentina's legendary First Lady, Eva Perón. That was written by Andrew Lloyd Webber in 1978.
And also taking some stuff from Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark, Preston.
It also boasts an impressive pedigree. David Bryan.
From Bon Jovi.
Yep, who co-wrote the scores, longtime keyboardist for Bon Jovi. He and Joe Pietro are also the creators of the 2009 hit Memphis, which won 4 Tony Awards. So
maybe he has a shot there.
David has become a legit force in musicals.
Yeah, he's a Juilliard grad.
Yeah, David Bryan. He's the real deal.
So is this like a legit biography, or is it a sort of a fantastical look at Diana?
I think it's a fantastical look because it's a musical.
Okay. You
know? So the San Diego, but it's gonna follow her life, her story. But I'm sure they're gonna, you know, add some to it to make it a great stage show.
It'll probably culminate with her meeting Michael Jackson.
The San Diego production, however, received mixed reviews. Uh-oh. So we'll see how that plays out. Let's see. How about this one? Arnie. Arnie Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
Built a career on being a manly man from his early start as a bodybuilder to his turn in Terminator to Governor. And he's a tough dude who unapologetically embraces iron-pumping machismo. So it's notable when Mr. Olympia makes a statement about masculinity. Arnold appears in The Game Changers, a documentary from Oscar winners Luis Cienfuegos and James Cameron about the rise of vegan food use among pro athletes. The film focuses on James Wilkes, a special forces trainer who is on a quest to find the truth about meat, protein, and strength, People reports. Several prominent athletes appear, including Arnold, who slams marketing tactics that he says trick men into believing that meat is manly. The 72-year-old said, there's no one that can relate to it better than I do because I've lived in that world. Steak is for men. They show these commercials, burgers, George Foreman with the grill, an epic sandwich. This is great. Great marketing for the meat industry, selling the idea that real men eat meat, but you've got to understand it's marketing. It's not based on reality. Arnold, by the way, has reportedly reduced his own meat consumption by 80%.
So this is the big deal, is that there has been this contention within the world of bodybuilding for years that, you know, the proteins you get from meat are more conducive to building your frame. And so I heard about this movie and this contention that you can get what you need protein-wise from non-meat products or non-meat from, you know, vegetables and things. So
right. We'll
see. I'm curious.
The Game Changers will screen in select cities for one day only on September 16th and in New York and Los Angeles on September 20th.
Does he also talk about steroid use as well? Because that certainly helped him get as big as he was. Mm-mm.
Ashley Graham is expecting her first child with husband Justin Irvin. The supermodel shared the happy news on Instagram while also toasting their 9-year wedding anniversary. She wrote, 9 years ago today, I married the love of my life. It has been the best journey with my favorite person in the world. And today we are feeling so blessed, grateful, and excited to celebrate with our growing family.
Do they have kids already?
Happy anniversary. That is a detail that was... No, it says, yeah, for their first child.
Okay. I wonder if he had had kids prior to.
I have no idea.
All right.
So she said, life is about to get even better. So good for them.
And she is. She was in last year's Sports Illustrated, right? She was the she was the first, what they consider plus size, to make the leap.
Okay.
Right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's ridiculous.
Well, she is. If you look at this, that was just a close-up shot of her. She's definitely not a...
she's curvy.
She's not thin. So today, I'm sorry, Todd, not today, Todd and Julie Chrisley have turned themselves in after being indicted on multiple counts of conspiracy, bank fraud, and tax evasion. This is from the Chrisley Knows Best show. And the stars previously said via Todd's Instagram account that they have nothing to hide and have done nothing to be ashamed of.
Their show is something to be ashamed of. That show on USA, and I've seen a couple episodes.
You were just talking about this.
It's horrible.
Okay.
It's when you talk about sculpted reality, you talk about how they manipulate these storylines, and we've talked about shows, Preston, like that show Tanked about the aquariums.
Mm-hmm.
This one is so ridiculously scripted and so ridiculously orchestrated that I don't know how anyone can watch it with any level of enjoyment. It's not like they're really entertaining people to begin with.
Mm.
It's just they're just annoying. He's better suited. He comes across as like one of those preachers we make fun of.
It really makes me weep for the country, to be honest, that there are big enough groups of people that keep shows like this alive.
7 years, this freaking thing.
It's unbelievable. So his attorney also stated that the allegations contained in the indictment are based on complete falsehoods.
Uh-huh.
We'll have to wait and see what happens.
There's an email in the indictment that says, if you do not, this is a quote from Todd, and this is a legend, and it's in the email, but it says, if you do not know how to do this, then find a crooked accountant to do it. So their entire intent of all this was finding somebody who would be crooked enough to get done what they needed to get done.
I call that damning evidence, Nick, in the world of...
find a crooked accountant to do it. Okay. Wow. Okay. Patricia Heaton, the actress, is attached to produce a project based on Perversion of Justice, a series of articles in the Miami Herald that exposed Jeffrey Epstein, who has a network of powerful friends in Hollywood, D.C., and Wall Street, as a serial sexual predator. News of the series actually came 3 days after Epstein was found dead in his Manhattan jail cell by an apparent suicide. So there's going to be a series about that coming out.
Did you see the recent coroner's report came out? I think it came out just this morning, maybe late last night, about him in jail. And, you know, the suicide is the belief. However, there are broken bones in his neck that would be commensurate with a strangulation. So they're not saying that's conclusively the case, but there seems to be a lot more damage than one might get from strangling themselves.
Did he hang himself?
That's the word. Yeah, he was bizarrely, he was left in a cell with a bunk bed, which you're not supposed to do when someone has been on suicide watch. So they're saying, you know, the conspiracy theories are going to be off the charts because
that's why I've been purposely avoiding the story.
There's just been a ton of stuff that's so weird about this.
Well, so
dude's dead.
I had also heard, however, though, because he's dead, Preston, all these NDAs or
non-disclosure agreements.
Yes. Are now null and void. Ah. So all these people who were not able to talk before are now able to talk.
Okay.
We're talking limo drivers and stuff.
I think
what we're talking
is about the new show after Chrisley Knows All.
Yep. Yeah. All right, a couple other things. Ernest Hemingway's A Movable Feast is being developed as a TV series. Have you ever read
Yes,
Hemingway?
I love Hemingway.
I've never read
it. He takes his lunch to one place and then he drives to another
place.
Oh,
Movable Feast.
And he says, you're going to bring that sandwich over here or what?
It's about a lunchbox.
It's a movable feast.
I've never read Hemingway.
Snows of Kilimanjaro, Islands in the Stream, about the writing of the Dolly Parton song.
Old Man in the Sea is an easy
old
read.
Old Man in the Sea is great.
An easy read? Yeah, yeah, if you're looking for a Hemingway classic, it's only 150 pages or something like that.
And tear through that.
You can tear through it, and it's about this old guy in the ocean.
I know the story. Yeah. I know what it's about. I've just never read. I'm aware of Ernest Hemingway and his very descriptive, writing style and everything. But
he is stalked by a clown with a red balloon.
Yeah. That sounds familiar.
Old clown in the sea.
So anyhow, his granddaughter, actress Mariel Hemingway. Producers John Goldstone and Mark Rosen and the Village Roadshow Entertainment Group are attached to develop. A Movable Feast has been my favorite book. This is according to Mariel Hemingway. She said, A Movable Feast has been my favorite book since I was 11 years old when my father took me to Paris.
That's the one I never read.
While reading the book together, he showed me where Papa lived and Daddy was raised, ate, wrote, and dreamed of becoming a great writer. His deep love of my grandmother Hadley and his growing passion for art is an inspiring time at the beginning of his iconic career.
They say there's a particular passage in the book, Preston, where he picks up a hamburger and walks it across the room.
Oh.
And says, you'll be in tears.
I want to reveal on film the coming-of-age story that has captivated readers and burgeoning writers for several decades.
So there's Mariel Hemingway and Margot Hemingway. You remember Margot? She was the first star out of the gate. Mm-hmm. And she...
Did she really?
Yes. It's very weird. But Mariel took off, the younger sister, and then you never hear about Margot anymore.
I thought she died, but I'm probably off on that.
That would be a good reason for not hearing
from her. I don't know. No, I'm probably incorrect, but Nick's going to look it up.
Yeah, she passed away 23 years ago.
Okay, yeah.
Well, that's still no excuse.
All right, and then one last story. Emilia Clarke is starring in a holiday-themed rom-com with Henry Golding, and fans are getting their first look. It's called The Last Christmas.
I watched this trailer yesterday.
Yeah, the trailer dropped showing Clarke as Kate, a self-described mess who is working as an elf at a Christmas shop under an exacting boss. She said, I was really sick, and I nearly died. I don't tell people because they get weird, but I don't think you'll get weird. She says this in the trailer, so
yeah.
I'm just scared all the time. The screenplay was written by Emma Thompson, who also stars as Clark's mother, and the film will bow on November 8th. So Christmas rom-com.
I think she's delightful.
Yeah.
That's the word I would use.
And I like him, too.
Yeah.
He was in Crazy Rich Asians.
Yeah. I just watched that last night again for the 31st time.
It's a great movie.
It's a lot of fun. Listen, I like to watch people live wealthy, too, to see all the stuff that they're doing.
I agree.
I just so their first class compartment on the flight over is worth looking at that.
All right, we're ready for clips. Reef Break features a thief-turned-fixer who fights crime on a... What?
Dirigible?
No, I-D-Y-L-L.
Idol.
A Pacific Idol?
Yeah, it's like almost like an atoll.
Okay.
Like a bikini atoll?
In this
or a tankini atoll?
So like a small island?
Yes.
Okay. In this clip, Poppy Montgomery.
It's a bunch of nonsense here.
Describes how she vicariously lives through the character she portrays. Here we go.
She's like me, but like the way more outrageous sort of force of nature person. And it's a lot of fun to play her. There's a lot of freedom in a character that says what everybody's thinking, you know? She's the one who says what everyone's thinking, but they don't have the courage to say it. And I love that about her.
Poppy Montgomery needs to be British.
Yeah, I'm right.
You know?
Yeah. I was expecting a British accent.
No, that's not the way they work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The ones you don't have any idea are British or British, and the ones you assume are British are never British.
Yeah, but the name Poppy.
Has she been in anything?
Without a Trace?
Known for, Without a Trace.
Without an accent.
Nothing crazy over the top. Okay.
Reef Break.
Reef Break.
Reef Break. Reef Break.
Wait a minute.
Jay Giles.
Freeze Frame. airs tonight at 10 p.m. on ABC. Here's the next clip. The Outpost features Talon, last surviving member of the Black Bloods, as she works to track down the killers of her family. Here, Jessica Green discusses how she got accustomed to being on set.
I was, thrown in the deep end at age 16. Never acted before and was lucky enough to get my role in my first series called Lightning Point. And I had to learn fast. And you do get thrown in the deep end and you either sink or swim.
The Outpost is on tonight, 8 p.m., and that's on the CW.
So what am I going to watch, that or Reef Break?
I don't know, but that chick sounds more like Poppy Montgomery than Poppy Montgomery.
I agree.
Does.
Maybe we got the clip screwed up.
She sounds like an Aussie. Yeah, a little bit.
That's right.
Yeah, a little bit of that southern side thing. All right, and that's what I have for you.
So the Troy Dingo.
A couple of things to mention. Our Belly Flop Championship is today, and we will be at Valley Forge Casino Resort. You see how beautiful it looks out?
Yes, I'm loving this.
I think that's how we're going to be today. There's only the slightest chance of an isolated shower somewhere, so we're good to go, man.
Do you know what I like pressing, too?
85 degrees. It's going to be great.
It's a good 10 degrees less than it usually is when we have this.
Yeah.
It is. It's normally sweltering
while
we're there, so this is going to be really enjoyable. So please join us. Doors open at 5. It's free. 21 and older, everybody invited, and 6 o'clock we'll try to get things started. So let's do that. We also have a chance for you to win, among other things, a $1,000 Best Buy gift card this morning. Yeah, it's with the emoji code. So Casey's put together an emoji code, and a series of emojis that we have posted at PrestonandSteve.com. Just go on our website, take a look at it, decipher it. Write that phrase or those words down. Later on, we'll ask you to call in the designated caller. Wins that $1,000 Best Buy gift card, along with all 4 Avengers films and a limited edition Avengers Assembled Steel book.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And this is courtesy of our friends at Best Buy, which you can only get that book. The Steel book is only sold at Best Buy stores and on BestBuy.com. And it's all in conjunction with Avengers Endgame, which is now available on digital and Blu-ray. So go check that out. But while you're doing that, if you would like to go see a special campfire-style acoustic performance with Cage the Elephant before the doors open for their show with Beck Wednesday, August 21st at BB&T Pavilion, and join Marissa Magnata in the process.
Nice.
We'll take caller number 10 and we'll give you a pair of tickets. 215-263-WMMR is part of MMR's Rock Residency. Visit WMMR.com for details, including special ticket prices starting at just $19.33. So caller number 10. We can give you those tickets. We'll be back in a moment.
Here we go.
Here comes the MM Army.
What's going on?
Join Brent Porsche Thursday from 5 to 7 at the Exton Red Robin. They're celebrating 20 years with 1990s throwback prices on select menu items and different levels of fun each day this week. A portion of sales will be donated to the Lionville Volunteer Fire Company. Thursday from 6 to 8, it's Preston and Steve's Belly Flop Championship 2019 Battle of the Sexes at Valley Beach Poolside Club at Valley Forge Casino Resort. Admissions free for spectators 21 and up. Enjoy a dip in the pool plus drink specials, including beer buckets and belly flop jello shots. Valley Forge Casino Resort, Philly's only resort casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
93.3 WMMR. Everything and everywhere that rocks.
All right, thank you very much, Kathy. Yeah, tonight, judges, we have... So Mike Jerrick was going to be one of our judges, but we had a rain date. And,
yeah.
So schedules didn't work out, so we called our buddy Richard Curtis, who's over at Fox 29.
That's cool.
And he is the host of the television show The Classroom.
Yes.
And he's really fired up about it. He's a high-energy guy.
Yeah, I think sure. He's perfect, right?
He's really perfect. Fired up yeah. about it, and he's going to be one of our judges tonight, as well as the Hebrew Hammer, who won it before.
So he comes from a place of being a champion himself, knowing what to look for.
Exactly. He's a former champion, yeah. So he knows specifically what needs to be done to win.
Right. And he's been both presentation and execution.
That's correct. And Casey has been a judge every single year.
I think Casey's
a diver.
Yeah, and he's a necessity, Preston, yep. because mm-hmm. a lot of times he will cut to the chase on the actual belly flop itself.
He's mm-hmm. the toughest judge.
Yeah. Yeah, and you've got to have that element to the judging.
It's
You're
funny.
Like the Simon Cowell.
I am. Yeah. But you know what? Like I call it like I see it, Kath. And there was a guy last year who, for all intents and purposes, should have won
yep.
the whole contest. No offense to you, Nutty Irishman.
Yeah.
But on his championship flop, his knees went in first.
Yep.
And he had said something to me afterwards. I said, check the tape. And he indeed checked the tape.
Yeah. It's good that he admitted.
Yeah.
So see what happens tonight. We'll be there. And like I said, doors open at 5:00. So come on out. So yesterday, obviously, all the, you know, the news coverage of this shooting took place in Tioga Nicetown was, you know, constant and intense and pretty wild. But it ended up in one of the best ways possible. I mean, people were injured, but no one killed.
Just amazing.
And yeah, so it was pretty compelling stuff to watch on television. It was scary, but you couldn't take your eyes off of it.
Yeah. So we talked just before we do a conference call every night. And we both got on the conference call, and I said, "You're watching this, and you had not heard of it at that point. I had just gotten the alert." And then there were, you know, an active shooter situation. And then, you know, thinking about starting watching it at that point and then it finally ending close to midnight with mm-hmm. this guy coming out of this this shooter situation being, stuck in the house and all of this stuff. And then the fact that when I saw you see those words, 6 police officers shot, you know, oh, dear God.
Yeah.
And then to know that everyone's left the hospital, correct, Kathy?
Yeah, all the police officers that were shot left. The
yeah.
woman, the female officer who was in the car crash, I think that she is still in the hospital, or at least that's what was last said, that she was still in the hospital.
All right, so to answer your question from earlier this morning when you were doing the news report, I think, Steve, you'd asked, you know, you'd heard a couple of people were arrested besides the shooter who was
right.
pulled out. So we got a text from a Philadelphia police officer who wanted to remain anonymous. So take it for what it is. But had said, you know, they were serving a warrant and they had come in and they had gotten 2 people and they had arrested them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then the guy started shooting.
Oh, that's who was in custody.
So
okay.
These were the other people that were in custody, apparently. So and they were caught up in it and stuck in there, as well as those other couple of officers. So that's what a police officer texted in and told me.
Thank you. Yeah, to clarify that. So as it progressed throughout the evening, we were hearing things like this shooter. They were on the second floor. And again, all of this will come out. But I'm like, it's like you're watching a movie. I mean, you got to think about it. These are real people, real police officers who are doing this and dealing with this. And, you know, this incredibly hypercritical situation. But when I was hearing one of the reports, apparently they said the guy was shooting through the roof, the ceiling upstairs through the floor of the second floor where he believed the cops were, because they were with 2 people they had arrested. So
He just kept firing. Like, it was over hours. It didn't stop. He would fire at them. And then I guess, it would calm down a bit. And then he would fire again at them.
And they kept calling his cell. So somehow they had his phone number. And he would pick up but not talk. And then eventually they got his lawyer mm-hmm. on the phone. The way the police handled this is just astonishing. They were able to turn this guy, who I just assumed, to my horror and to everyone's horror, it just seemed like he was not going to go out alive. He just
right.
wanted to go out in a blaze.
Yeah, but, well, there's been so many stories that
yeah.
end that way that,
right.
that it's easy to assume that something like that might happen, yeah.
So the lawyer said, the lawyer said he was watching TV, didn't realize it was somebody that was a client of his, or that,
yeah.
that this guy has an extensive record, as you would well imagine.
Yeah.
And then he said to him, listen, I'm going to shut it off because I'm not going to watch you die. Basically, that's what he was saying to this guy. Whatever they did or however they were able to finesse this, they got him out. They fired tear gas, apparently, into the house. he came out. It was just about midnight, right, Kathy?
It was around midnight.
I was watching Walter Perez for 6ABC got on the scene last night, and he was describing how difficult it was navigating that part of town. You would imagine, like, so many streets were blocked off. And then he said other streets were completely empty. So I'm wondering what it was like in those neighborhoods, because you had all the news helicopters floating around. And
that's an active residential area.
Exactly, yeah. And so people coming from and going to work and you know, kids coming home from their activities and whatever. So it just must have been really challenging just moving around in that part of town.
To lock down an area that quickly and to make sure that people are safe and not going in. How do you control that?
Well, Nick, that's what Commissioner Ross said, that it's even more amazing, obviously, that these police officers are alive today, but the kids and the people that were on the street, because it was the middle of the day. It was about 4:30 in the afternoon.
I was watching the video footage of it while it was live, and I was doing a head count of all the cops that were there, and I'm like, there's like 50 police officers there or something like that. And immediately I thought of, was it Die Hard 3?
Yeah.
Where they have the, you know, they distract all the police and they all go to one area so they can rob the bank. I immediately thought, man, if you're a criminal, you can have a field day elsewhere right in and around that area, but not right in the middle of it, because all the police officers are concentrated into that area.
They said it looked like just like a parking lot. There was police cars, there were police officers, and they were just parked there.
Yeah. So CNN was going live, Fox News, all the news stations were going live, the Nationals. And the thing that we were talking about, which are things that you have to consider now, is that the guy, the shooter, if he had access to a TV or his phone or whatever, could be watching streaming video about what the police are doing outside.
I heard that he may have been doing that, and that's why they you know, the cameras backed off and took a little further distance, so they weren't tipping him off the police were.
There was a story that there was a guy, and I haven't heard much more about it, who is in, so directly behind that house where the shooter was a guy in his house. And so he couldn't go anywhere.
I think it was a man and his wife, and they said they were hiding upstairs.
And they shut, so their motion activity light outside, I think he said he either broke it or shut it off so that it wasn't going, he wanted to just lay low. But you can't do anything. You're collaterally part of that.
Mm-hmm. I have a love-hate relationship with Twitter. Most of the time I hate it, but it is still good for breaking news. So I was following a lot with Twitter, going back and forth between the news reports last night. And then one thing started trending last night, and I got to ask about it because I didn't know what it meant. Apparently, at one point, they identified the shooter as John Wick. J-A-W-N Wick.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't know where that started. I didn't know if it started from a news report or if it started on Twitter.
Was somebody thinking they're clever?
And then went on its own volition, yes. And so it was...
It's not the time for clever.
That's what I was wondering.
No, it's horrible when you see crap like that.
But I didn't know if it started, Steve, with somebody on the news accidentally saying something like that, because how when the news people have to fill time. They don't know what's going on, so they keep talking even if they're not quite sure what's going
on. No, you're right. And because of that, a lot of times things like this that are just kind of ripped from social media end up being broadcast.
Right.
All right. So I'm getting a number of texts coming in that said that Boner Forever got showed multiple times on national coverage of the shooting. It says Boner Forever building on Broad Street.
Oh, is that the
anybody know Boner Forever?
It's
what that is?
Graffiti, I think.
Oh, okay. Is that what it is? Okay. All right. Didn't see that.
No, I did not see that.
I missed that one. Nick, you talk about Twitter. I was with a bunch of actually news reporters last night from Fox, NBC, and ABC, and they were checking Twitter. Now, they were obviously on the phone with their station as well, but they were also kind of scrolling through Twitter to see what the latest update was, which I kind of thought was interesting.
Yeah.
The news outlet, and they were using Twitter.
Sure. Well, and as you said, sometimes it can be an asset, and sometimes it can be only muck up the thing.
Well, and sometimes those suspects will go on social media, perpetrator, or do Facebook Live or a video and do it. And so they can glean information from that.
Exactly right. And Preston, at the beginning of this whole thing, I'd heard and it had been reported a couple of times that the shooter himself was broadcasting on Facebook Live.
Oh, really?
His whole deal. But I never heard more after that. But
would have seen video by now.
Yeah, we live in a day and age where that has happened. People have committed crimes live on Facebook.
It's weird, man.
It is super weird.
Did you guys hear the dispatch call?
Yeah. Screaming and yelling. Of course.
Shocking.
It's pandemonium.
Horrific.
Yeah.
Do we have any of that audio over, Casey?
No.
All right, here we go.
The rear bedroom. We have one male handcuffed in front bedroom, female and male in the rear bedroom. Male is still down too, actively shooting. Multiple SWAT and long guns on location radio. Full breach is about to be made. Confirm, one officer trapped, second floor, possibly bathroom.
That's correct, floor. He's in the bathroom.
Receive. Have all officers maintain a position, front perimeter secure. Unknown for rear because I'm in the front radio.
All right. There's some there's some other audio of the people, you know, yelling when shots when
well when the officers went down. Yeah, it got pretty chaotic.
Stop and think about when we just put together the belly flop challenge. We're on scene. Well, where's this guy? Wait. Imagine this, the complexity of something like this, where you're trying to, you know, and it's a life or death situation. It just boggles the mind that they're able to do what they do.
It also puts it into perspective. Yeah. Take it, you know, like, relax. It's the belly flop contest, not six officers shot.
Right,
you know
right.
what I mean? Wow. Yeah, like, yeah. What they go out and do every day is amazing.
Of course, they train for it, you know, as well. So that's why they do what they do.
What do you mean? We trained for belly flop, no?
And it's still... Well, yeah,
we still screw
it up. Good job of it, though, right? We trained for that. You guys ever been in a lockdown situation before?
I was and didn't know it.
What happened?
There was a crime. It was... Back all the way when I was in East Northport, Long Island, there was a crime and there was a domestic issue, and the guy apparently had a gun, no one told us. We only found out after the fact that the general area was sort of on lockdown. It was about half a block up from our house. It was a suburban, you know, thing. But, yeah, you didn't know?
No,
what?
No.
What are you talking about? No, yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, because if they shut down a whole... you know, street or two, you will not go to your house, and you've got to either sit outside and wait or find somebody that can, you know.
I was in my house.
Have a hangout for a while.
You can't play in the house. I didn't know.
Yeah. It was years ago. I don't know if it was ever a lockdown situation, but do you remember? I think we were actually at Y100, and I was like, I have to go. My neighbor's holding his mom hostage, and I left work.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. I left. It was after the show. We were in the office, and, you know, I hadn't been
with
you guys
that long.
That's
when you were with SWAT.
No, but you guys were like, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
But it was a very, I mean, these people had been my neighbors for my entire life, and they were very close to us. And my mom called, like, frantic and was like, you know me, I was going to go in and take care of it.
Right,
I don't know,
I left
work and went home. And but, yeah, it was, I mean, SWAT team was there. And
what ended up being the story?
They're both passed away now, but he had drug issues and his mom was always trying to help him. And he just kind of went a little nuts inside the house and was holding her, SWAT came. Everybody came out safe in that incident. But it was, you know, my parents were told because we were right, you know, across the street from them. And they were told, don't come out of the house. And then we were like, you know what? You should sell your house now.
Yeah. I mean, I can't. So you let's say you show up at you're heading home and then there's a police tape down the block and you hear there's a situation and your family's at the house.
Yeah.
You're going to panic. You're going to want to get to them.
Oh, automatically you go into like movie mode. Like, my family's down there. I need to get down there.
Yeah. Kathy's putting on her, you know, her camo and putting stuff on her face.
Meanwhile, if it was real, I'd be.
That's okay.
In a hole somewhere.
I'll be a target.
Yeah, you need me.
Yeah.
The only thing I ever experienced is me and a friend of mine were driving through suburban neighborhood, our neighborhoods that we lived in, and we pulled up and we saw two cop cars in front of a house. We didn't know anybody who lived there, and we saw the officer go around to his trunk, and we pulled up, rolled down the window, and we were like, "What's going on?" And he turns and he's got a shotgun, and he just goes. Get out of here.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yep, you got it.
Okay.
See ya.
It's okay, officer. We're in the image.
Preston, I think I was driving home from work one time, and I don't know if you remember this. This was probably 13, 14 years ago. I called you. This was back when I lived in Phoenixville, and there was a barn on my way home. It's no longer there. They knocked it down, and it's a neighborhood now. But there were 50 cops working on this place, and I said, can you give me Matt O'Donnell's number? Because I'm really curious as to what's going on. So I called Matt. You gave it to me. I called Matt. It was a training exercise. But all these cops were working on it and like just learning how to deal with situations like they were dealing with yesterday.
I
was at a staging area before one of those exercises. It was we were looking to buy a car. We were at a car lot, and there's like 40 cops in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're wearing, you know, They're wearing the tactical equipment, and I'm like, what the F is going on? Yeah.
This must be a hell of a sale.
Yeah. And they were just preparing to do a training exercise. Right. That was where they were going to meet and then go to wherever they needed to go. It was pretty wild.
Stuff that comes to mind, Preston, is if you travel out west where there are these long, you know, these long isolated roads and they have prisoners doing road work,
yeah.
And you come upon that. Through years of doing that sort of traveling out there,
yeah.
It's a move along.
Right. Well, I told you guys when they were getting ready to move to the from Graterford to what's now Phoenix, the prison out by me. I went by the Wawa one morning and I stopped off, and it was 50 of the biggest individuals I've ever seen.
Right.
I was like, is the steroid convention in town or what's going on? And they were getting ready to move all the prisoners from that morning from Graterford over to Phoenix. So these were the, I forgot what you call them. I forgot that there's an acronym or something for this.
Big Mother Effers. That's the name.
This particular group of people. But I was like, wow, okay. I'm just going to move along here.
We're with the BMFs, Big Mother Effers.
Let me go to Kate online. Kate, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hey, what's up, Kate?
Hey, so, I was in a pretty crazy lockdown situation. I was about 12 years old. I was home alone waiting for my parents to come home from work, and I'm on the phone with my girlfriend, and I hear helicopters over my house, and I hear people outside yelling. I'm like, what the heck is that? So I go outside on my porch, and there's all these cops, and they're like, get inside, and I'm like, what's happening? So I run inside, and I turn on the news, and apparently there was a gun shop up the street from me. Someone had robbed it and shot and killed the owner.
Oh, man.
And apparently had run through my backyard to get away. And they were looking for the murder weapon in my yard because he had, like, tossed it and ran.
Whoa.
And then my parents come home, and they think the worst. They're like, oh, my God, what did she, like, burn down the house or something? Well, they spent the good part of the night, like, ripping down my gutters and everything trying to find the murder weapon at my house.
That is wild. So were you able to process that as a kid?
I was just, like, scared as hell. I was, like, tell my friend, I'm like, stay on the phone with me. I don't know what's happening. Like, it was just insane. I didn't know how to process any of it.
So I wonder, does the protocol in that case, because I was just completely unaware that anything was happening. It was probably a more casual, I don't know, that there didn't seem to be police tape up when, you know, years ago in my neighborhood. But yeah. Do they go door to door and just tell people to stay where they are? Or, how do you handle that much?
Yeah, I guess.
It's just...
I think they were, like, going around my whole neighborhood, like, because at that point it was still fresh, it was still new, so they hadn't been able to, like, come to my house to tell me or tell anyone to stay inside or check if anyone was home. But, as time passed, like, they were going around my neighborhood and telling everyone to stay inside.
Yeah.
There was cops driving around, like, doing the loudspeaker thing, like, no one come outside, stay indoors.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, so, like, yeah. Preston, I think of the movie Patriot's Day.
I was thinking, too. Yeah.
That whole process.
They had to shut the city down, and they were telling people don't go outside.
Yeah, the marathon bar.
Flat out, don't go outside, and they were, you know, making sure that nobody was you know, going to get into a situation where they might be mistaken for somebody else and get hurt and all that. Let me go to Megan. Hi, Megan. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. What's your story, Megan?
I used to work at a hardware store in a little shopping center in Exton, and across the way was a cigar shop, and this guy used to sell that, like, fake weed stuff that was going around.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they eventually made it illegal. Well, I guess he continued to sell it, like, on the hush-hush, and I was there one time when a cigar shop got raided, and, I mean, there was dogs and, you know, it had to be 15 cop cars, and they came out with a whole bunch of boxes of whatever this stuff was, and I guess the story was that some kids had gotten caught with it, and the cops were like, you know, if you tell us where you got it, we won't, you know, you won't be in any trouble, and they dined this guy out, and the shop's still open, which blows my mind.
So did they lock your office down? Were you told to stay within the building?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the whole shopping center, we weren't allowed to leave.
Wow.
I guess, you know, do they go
but ahead? I have a pedicure appointment.
Right, right. Yeah, right. And my favorite girl is working today.
B. Casey.
Yeah. Eagles are back at training camp.
Let me go to Scott, who's been around some shootouts recently. Hi, Scott. Good morning.
Gadzooks,
man. So it says here you've been in the middle of two shootouts this past month. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right. And West Philly over on Cambridge Ave, I was working. I had a bunch of guys in the house. I pulled up to drop material off, and all the guys came out. A van pulled up in the street behind me. So, like, their passenger door was, like, at the back of the bed of my truck.
Mm-hmm.
And a van pulled up, opened the door, and started shooting at the kids sitting on the porch.
Whoa! Oh, my God!
And then the van, you know, took off, and all the kids on the porch ran into the middle of the street, straight standing right at my driver door, shooting at the van that pulled away.
Dude, so you're in the middle of a drive-by shooting and a
return fire.
Wow.
Yeah, listen, it was crazy. Before, like, it wouldn't. I don't know. I'm used to it because I work in Camden and Philly.
Yeah.
I see it all the time. But now that I have a son, I was actually, like, scared. Like, my kids, too. So I was like, oh, man, we're getting out of here. So I got everybody and I left. And then, like, 2-3 weeks later, I was in Chester, which is a bad area that I work. And there was a fight across the street, like 15, 20 kids. They're all fighting, fist fighting. I said to my guy, I'm like, come on, let's get out of here because they're going to start shooting at each other.
Yeah.
No sooner did I say that, they all just started shooting.
Mm. Scott, that's, I don't know. I mean, you know, like I, if I skid a little bit, if I hydroplane a little bit, I have to pull over. how do you come back from that? You know, that's got to just totally just knock you off your feet.
Yeah, it's insane. Every area that I work in is all gang and drugs all over Camden. Like, we see it on a regular basis, but.
Wow.
More and more recently, it's been getting scarier and scarier.
And then, Scott, I'll bet, let's say, you know, your people are shooting around you. You're in your truck. You floor it to get out of there. And then you could hit somebody. You could, you know what I mean? You could all of a sudden end up in a situation as well.
Yeah. But both times I was boxed into where I couldn't leave. I just had to, you know, duck down to the passenger seat for a second.
Wow.
So with that happening to you, does it blow your mind that it's the police officers are the ones that run towards this to stop this from happening? You know, you're there like freaking out. You know, it's an amazing thing to see what they're responsible for, what they have to do. Because again, we've talked about this, Preston. When you see something like when a gun goes off or there's a fist fight, we're so used to seeing things through the prism of movies. When you're seeing it in reality, it's nothing like it. It's nothing like what you could possibly imagine.
Yeah, it's way different. Yeah. Absolutely. Let me go to let's see. We got a lot of calls here. How about Liz? Hi, Liz. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's up, Liz?
Gadzooks.
Well, same to you.
So. A few years ago, I lived in Delco in Norwood, and we had the cops converge on our neighborhood because a woman had been driving erratically, and she was pulled over by a cop, tried to run him down, and ended up in our neighborhood. But our street is a circle, so they converged on the neighborhood. We could see it from our kitchen window, the intersection, and they blocked off the intersection, and she would drive our circle, and every time they would do something to try to stop her. The first time they kind of tried to mash out her driver's side window, and that didn't happen, and she went around the circle again because, of course, she was unfamiliar with the area, so she didn't know it was a circle. And
then, why do I keep saying that, seeing the same police?
So the second time around, they actually stood in front of her car and shot at it. I assume they were shooting at the radiator to try and get the car to stop. And then the third time around, she kind of like hit one of their police cars, went up through somebody's yard to get out of the neighborhood finally, and then about a mile away in Glen Olden caused a really bad accident.
So are you?
But it's really scary when you see the cops actually doing this stuff,
right?
50 yards from your kitchen window.
So you were witness to a good portion of it.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow. Yes. Are you on Love Lane?
Yes, actually.
Casey, you've driven that circle many times. Look, kids, the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, Liz. I'm so smart when it comes to Delco. Like, the second she said circle, I'm like, I think I know that street.
I'm so smart when it comes to Delco.
Come on, are you guys not impressed?
I am impressed.
But I you know, unless it's so, is it? It's a traffic circle.
It's a closed circle.
How does anyone ever leave?
There's one way in, one way out. But okay. It's in the middle of a neighborhood. This lady really had to work her way, and she clearly had no idea where she was going. The fact that she got there is just bad luck.
Right.
She had to make all the wrong turns just to get there.
Yeah, we're looking at a map.
It's a circle.
It
uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
And then there's a circle around that. Park Avenue is a circle, too, Casey. Mm-hmm.
And then look, Chris, right in the middle of it all is a huge gloved hand.
West Martin Lane. No, that's the icon.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's a cursor for this. Casey, maybe you should go back to if we play Crack Shot again as Delco is your subject.
No, I'm not. Expertise. No. They always
but
find
so smart.
The chink in my armor.
Oh, okay. It happens. All right. Well, anyhow, thankfully, nobody killed. No citizens, even a scratch.
Miraculous.
Yesterday as well during this shootout. And everybody went home. So that's a good thing. It's a good and even the suspect lives so they can, you know, have this guy face justice and everything. And so it was, aside from the injuries, it was one of the best possible outcomes of something that could be deadly.
Yeah.
And wasn't deadly. So kudos to the Philadelphia police. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back in a moment. Don't forget, we have an emoji code, a chance for you to win a $1,000 Best Buy gift card, along with the exclusive limited edition Avengers Assemble Steelbook in all four Avengers films, courtesy of BestBuy.com and the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So go take a look at what the emoji code is at PrestonandSteve.com. In a little while, we'll have you call in and try and win that by deciphering it. We'll be back in a moment.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
The Black Keys. Greta Van Fleet. Five Finger Death Punch.
New music. More of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
Thanks, Kathy. Marissa is headed to the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair for the first time in her life on Saturday.
I think she's going to love it.
I think so, too. And it looks like a beautiful day weather-wise, so it's going to be great to be there. And we have not only tickets, but we also have bus transportation for you and a friend on Saturday from here at WMMR, should you like a ride. We can do that.
I love this because this is authentic. During the Renaissance, that's the only way they could travel.
By bus. So I'm going to give away four pairs of tickets, and we'll start with caller number 7, and we'll go from there, 215-263-WMMR, so 7, 8, 9, and 10. You will win the passes, and keep in mind that you can celebrate Her Majesty's Coronation Day Saturdays and Sundays at the Pennsylvania Renaissance Fair right off Turnpike, exit 266, discount tickets at parenfair.com. So call right now, and we'll have more of those to give away. We have a lot of stuff to give away between today and tomorrow, so stay close. One of the things we're doing, the Avengers Endgame home release promotion, we're doing the emoji code. All right, so the code is set up at PrestonandSteve.com. Casey used a series of emojis. It spells out a phrase, a word, something. You have to decipher it and hang on to that, and we'll ask you to call in a little while. The winner today, just like we had, was it yesterday or the day before?
Day before.
$1,000 Best Buy gift card, along with The limited edition Avengers Assembled Steel book and four Avengers films on digital, 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray and Blu-ray. So get on that because we don't want you to miss your opportunity.
Without telling me what it is, do you know what the second symbol is in this code?
I do. That's one of the only ones. Yeah,
figure that out?
Yeah.
I still don't know what it is.
Yeah, I'll bring you up to speed on that in a moment because Casey's used it before. He had to tell me what it was one time, but I do know what that is. All right, we're going to do the Bizarre Five.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
And this morning's B-File, brought to you by French Creek Outfitters in Phoenixville, with everything you need for the great outdoors and beyond. All the big name brands, they have them. So visit FrenchCreekOutfitters.com for additional information. French Creek Outfitters. Why take a chance with anybody else? Daytona Beach police say they've arrested a man on suspicion that he used nunchucks and roach spray on his neighbors.
Nunchucks and roach spray.
Both of them.
He knows both the tricks of the ninja.
Officers say Larry Adams intentionally sprayed five people and threatened to shoot them on Monday.
Ooh.
Two witnesses told police they originally left their apartment to tell neighbors to lower the volume of the music coming from a car outside their building. The people inside the car told officers they were celebrating their 18th birthday of one of them. Adams also left his apartment around 1 a.m. and was verbally combative with the group by the car. The victim told police Adams cursed at them, made threats to the group, and even threatened to shoot them. The group began to argue with Adams, and that's when the 61-year-old pulled out the can of roach spray and sprayed him down. Now, you're going to love this, okay?
Okay.
So Adams then proceeded to threaten the victims with nunchucks. The victims evaded the attack, and instead, Adams struck the car. The nunchucks bounced back and struck him in the forehead.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Tell me there's footage.
And unfortunately, there's not.
Oh, it's some of my favorite footage is when that stuff happens.
Adams opted to call 911, as did two of the victims. Officers say they found Adams with a small cut to his forehead. Upon checking his home, they found one nunchuck, a can of pepper spray, and one empty can of roach spray.
There's footage. I think it's on the site, Only in Russia, Twitter, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a guy, Preston, takes a baseball bat to a car, slams it down, and that bat ricochets right back into his forehead.
Bang.
Yeah.
Police arrested Adams on aggravated battery and aggravated assault charges.
I was obsessed with nunchucks when I was a kid. I wanted them so bad.
I made my own.
And Chinese stars, I wanted them so bad. My mom's like, no way.
Yeah. Sure, play with these.
A South Florida mother who was upset about her children being rezoned to another school threatened to shoot up the new school just as the academic year began. So maybe that'll fix the problem.
We can see you're upset by this.
Miranda Perez was arrested Sunday on an intimidation charge for threatening a mass shooting.
That's all she gets?
A friend had called authorities after video chatting with Perez. He told deputies Perez was upset over rezoning to relieve overcrowding at their old school. She mentioned wanting to friend Zachary Cruz on Facebook because she, quote, likes violent things. Mm-hmm. Reports say Perez also spoke of Zachary's older brother, Nicholas Cruz, who is accused of the 2018 mass shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Perez remains in the county jail without bail. Investigators say a Florida man sent a woman 10,000 text messages over 12 days.
Wow.
Officials say many of the texts sent by the 48-year-old Nicholas Nelson were sexually explicit and threatening. An arrest affidavit says the woman knows Nelson through a friend, but had rarely spoken to him when the text began arriving on April 5th. In one exchange, Nelson sent a picture of what appeared to be an airport parking ticket and said he would, quote, start blowing up planes to prove his point. Nelson was arrested in Georgia and returned to Florida on Saturday, and he asked the judge to lower his $500,000 bond on aggravated stalking charges, but they kept the bond in place. The judge said they believed that there was cause for concern.
Threatening to blow up planes?
Yeah.
Kind of makes you appreciate those D-picks.
Yeah. Four people arrested after a violent fight, including a woman who said she was cut with a beer bottle and her eyes were glued shut.
What?
Yeah. It happened early Saturday morning in White County, Georgia. Amy York said, I could feel my eyes burning. They were stuck together. I couldn't open them.
Ah, my eyes!
Investigators said Amy York couldn't open her eyes because she had super glue poured on them in the middle of a fight. Somebody managed to glue her eyes shut in the middle of a fight.
You got to commend them. That's a tough move.
So Amy York said that she and her ex... Now, try to follow this, okay? She and her ex-husband's ex-girlfriend, Rebecca Tyler, agreed to meet to fight after Tyler said some mean things about her children.
Them's fighting words.
Tyler brought along her daughter, Brooke Phillips, and her daughter's boyfriend, Kenneth Tatum. Casey York, Amy York's ex-husband, and Rebecca Tyler's ex-boyfriend came to help break up the fight.
Oh, boy.
He said that he saw Amy get hit with a broken beer bottle. Almost tore her earlobe off, he said. She had 15 stitches. They had to sew it back on. So all four were arrested for fighting. Tyler faces an additional charge of aggravated assault. York said, though, even though she went to the hospital and to jail, it was worth it. She said, nobody messes with her children. She said, even though I got arrested, I don't shed one tear. I had a smile on my face in that mugshot.
Time to pay the fiddler, whore!
Investigator said Kenneth Tatum took the video of the evidence of the fight on his phone, and that video is not part of police evidence, though. So,
They worked it out.
What a lovely day.
Yeah. But that you could whip crazy glue with that kind of accuracy?
Yeah, yeah. In St. Louis, thieves broke into Martin Casas's storage locker and snatched his comic book collection. But then they took the comics to a local comic shop to sell them. Thing is, Casas actually owns that shop they were trying to sell
them
to.
That's a problem.
So a woman called within days of the storage locker burglary and asked if Apothesis might want, that's the name of the store, might want to buy a box of her comics. Encouraged by a store employee, she dropped off the box on Friday for review and left her name and phone number. Well, Casas arrived shortly after. She left to see what she had brought. And as soon as he saw the box, he knew because he had written Cap on the one side, designating it as a box of Captain America comics. Inside, he searched for one particular comic, the third installment of the Captain America Truth series. He had gotten it years ago and knew that his copy had a small red mark on the corner.
Oh, man.
So he called the cops first, and then he called the woman. She apparently had no idea she was trying to sell the comics back to the rightful owner, so he played dumb. And he said, this is a great collection. You got at least a couple $100 worth in comics here. And he arranged a meeting for her the next morning. Before he hung up, he asked if she might have any more, as he was interested in buying whatever he could for the shop. And in fact, she said, yeah, she'd recently come into a lot of comics.
Oh, just by happenstance.
She said, me and my boyfriend, we do storage units.
Oh, they do.
Kazaz made an appointment with a woman to...
Well, that, what a coincidence. I have a storage unit.
To cut a deal, when she showed up, police were waiting. They arrested her and her boyfriend, who was waiting outside. And apparently, the couple later revealed where to find the rest of the collection. So he ended up getting his comics back.
Do you think the police have an undercover comic book division?
Maybe they do. All right, and there you go. That's what I got for you in the Bizarre File this morning. So let's give something else away. I told you we had a lot of stuff to give away. We're going to give away some beverages. I got beers. We're going to give away a case of Yards Philly Pale Ale. Hoppy, citrusy, and refreshing. It's summer's best beer. You can find Philly Pale Ale in bottles and cans wherever Yards beers are sold, including House of Brews, American Grill in Blackwood. Caller number 14 at 215-263-WMMR. It's got to be at least 21 years of age. We can set you up with that case of beer. So give us a call right now. Going to take a break. John Roy, comedian, performing at Helium Comedy Club tonight. He's going to be stopping by in a little while. That and more coming up when we return.
Stream WMMR anywhere you have an internet connection. Check out the mobile app or go to WMMR.com. You'll figure it out from there.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro, get personalized deals on the products you buy most, and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Thank you, Kathy. Today is August 15th. And August 15th, 1969, 50 years ago on this very date, the Woodstock festival happened. Woodstock took place on this day. It began.
And, unbelievable.
The 50 years ago. Yeah, amazing.
I just watched the extended... with the Academy Award-winning documentary movie Woodstock, which has some of those big iconic footage that we've seen, and there's extended stuff. And it's amazing and wonderful, and I also know that with every ounce of my being, I would have hated being there.
It depends. Because
it was a sloppy, smutty freaking mess.
Yeah, but if I was like, you know, 19, 20 years old, I would have loved wallowing around in that mud. And
it would have been uncomfortable.
And being in my own filth for a couple of days. By the way, before we get into the full discussion, because we're playing the song, Woodstock and Crosby, Stills, and Nash, I did something that I've been meaning to do for decades. I actually looked up the lyrics of this song.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because I never could figure out this. Hang on. That line right there, which right after it goes, we are stardust, we are golden, I'd always gone, we are bang, do you know what that lyric is?
No.
I looked it up. It is, we are stardust, we are golden, we are billion-year-old carbon.
Oh, I knew that.
I like it.
I just assumed.
I never would have gotten that.
Billion-year-old. Joni, who wrote that? Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, in the last chorus, they say, we're caught in the devil's bargain. I knew that.
All right.
But
all
I never knew. I'd always mumble through the other one, and they say it twice. We are billion-year-old carbon.
Huh.
I've been, that's pretty wild.
Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, too. I half those words, I don't know. It's one could be one of my all-time favorite songs.
Ah! I know that part.
Oh, yeah. That,
yeah. You do,
the
you
end?
Do that. Yeah.
That's excellent.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Some of it's in Spanish, right?
It is.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm going to run down some of the highlights. Kathy, you were going to say something about Woodstock?
Well, it's funny. Steve said that he thought that he would have hated it, the mess and all of that. That was my story that I was talking about earlier with my dad. He went. He was there and hated it. Didn't even stay for a full day. He said he climbed the fence and left.
No. So at the point he got there, they were already broaching the fence because you were. And, you know, as the story goes, you're going to relay it, President, obviously. You could purchase tickets. It was a big ticket push. In fact, we ran commercials on MMR for purchasing tickets for the original Woodstock so many years ago. But at a certain point, it became clear. It's funny. If you stop and think about the legend of the promoter, the guy who just tried to promote the anniversary concert and failed, the original Woodstock, for all intents and purposes, was a failure because they lost, you know, the amount of money. It became a free concert after a while. Now it became a legendary concert, but it was not exactly what they'd planned.
Did it become a free concert because too many people
showed
up? They
were breaking through the fences. Too many people showed up. The New York State Thruway was just blocked traffic. It was far more than they thought would attend.
My parents did attend as well, Kath, and my dad and mom bought their tickets, and they were there for a couple of days, and they'd had enough.
Did they go separately or were they together?
They were together. They were dating. Cool. And they went to college in upstate PA. They went to Lycoming University, which is in Williamsport. So it's not too far from the New York border. And they would actually go up to New York to party and hang out with friends that were in that part of the world as well. So they heard about this music festival. They were a fan of some of the bands.
Yo, I just met a guy who's banging Janis Joplin.
And they were kind of...
Kathy's dad.
They were kind of hippies. And so they decided to go and bought the tickets. Then the fences started getting crashed and people started coming in and overwhelming it, and it was
how soon the fences started coming down, because I got the impression, you get the impression in the documentary, in the movie, that it's quick.
Yeah, I think it's within the first day.
Yeah.
And were they camping in the concert grounds, or was there a separate camping area, do you know?
I don't know.
I think they were staying right there.
Yeah, okay. They were.
Because it was very loosely organized.
Yeah. So my parents were there for a day and a half, something like that, and then took off. They'd had enough. And I think nobody knew at the time, of course, of what a legendary thing this was going to become. Yeah.
I remember being a little kid and hearing the news reports and seeing on the local news, the traffic backed up.
Sure.
People, them admonishing you not to try to get there. It was pretty wild.
Yeah. You guys ever been to a festival-type concert like this?
No.
Not like this. I mean, I've been to Made in America. I know you went to Woodstock 99.
I was at Woodstock 99 and a couple of different fish.
I went to Muppets on Ice. Music is fun.
And actually, yesterday was the anniversary of the Fish Coventry concert, which was supposed to be their last concert ever. Went before, you know, they were breaking up.
You will do this, and you will savor it, and you will know how to play it right. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's the deal for people who really, something like this is just to have been a part of it. You're right, Preston. If you're of that age and of that sort of, you know, hippie society that was forming. It was the place to be, but I just don't. I a concert wears out its welcome, I think, in the 51st hour.
Well, and also keep in mind the times as well. You're talking about the turbulent 60s. There was a lot of, I mean, we're going through turbulent times now. And this was a big thing for the youth of America to try. That's why everybody wanted to be there.
Peace,
we're going to get together. Yeah. Peace, love. Let's just have a good time. And it was huge, man. So I pulled up, and we have some clips to play as well from back in the day. But I pulled up the entire list of every single performer. 32 acts had performed through that weekend. And some of the interesting things are like the length of time they played. You know, because sometimes you go to the festival shows, like we put it now with the MMRBQ, and bands will play like 45 minutes, something like that, and then you get to the next band and so on. And some of these guys are playing a couple hours.
As I recall, and it's depicted in the movie because of technical issues and getting certain bands out on stage and so on and so forth, like Richie Havens played much longer than he was supposed to play.
Mm. Well, he was the very first act to play.
Yeah.
So the first day, Friday, August 15th, had started off as more of, it was kind of like a warm-up thing. They started off with the folky acts.
Yes.
And then they eventually got into the heavier stuff. So Richie Havens opened first at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. He played for about an hour.
By the way, how that dude ever ended up with his fingers intact?
Oh, man. Yeah. He beats the crap out of the guitar. Yeah. It's awesome, that performance. And then, so I'll go through now. There was only, who was up next? Swami Satchidananda.
What the hell am I doing here?
He gave the invocation for the festival. He was a Swami. Then you had Sweetwater play. Some of these bands I don't remember. Burt Summer, came on after that.
He's a vaudeville comic.
Then Tim Harden, Ravi Shankar.
Yes.
Played a legendary sitar performer. Melanie Safka. So this is all, you know, the folk stuff. Then he had Arlo Guthrie.
Okay, I know that name.
Who was one of the first legendary performers to jump up, and he had a great set.
It's just one stage, right?
Super huge effing stage.
Yep. And then Joan Baez closed the first day. She didn't go on till 1 a.m. Yeah. So Arlo Guthrie was at about midnight, and he played till about 12:30. And then Joan Baez came on.
So also remember, you're out there. The people are there, like, out in the elements the whole freaking day. Yeah. I think that was a fairly sunny day, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, days it did rain. Yeah. They had some rain issues. But her last two songs, Swing Low, Sweet Chariot.
Yeah.
And then she went into We Shall Overcome. So it was a real, you know, very, very folky.
All right. So I don't know where in the state Woodstock is. Mm-hmm. Is it like right in the center of the state?
Well, it wasn't in Woodstock, right? It was in Saugerties.
Yes. Okay. Yep. Well, wherever it was, is that right in the middle of the state? Is it north?
North.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because temperature-wise, I would figure, you know, mid-August, it's probably nice during the day.
Yeah, it was comfortable.
Cool at night.
It was a little...
Could get hot.
Hot. Yeah, yeah. Steamy, they said, you know.
So Saturday, August 16th, the Sunday, August 17th, the day opened at 1:20 p.m. However, performances start a little before that. Quill played at noon.
We are Quill!
Uh-huh. Followed by Country Joe McDonald.
That's one of the classy performances.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I don't know any of the songs, unfortunately. Some of the bands I'm not familiar
Country
with.
Country Joe and the Fish, right?
Yep.
Is that going up the country?
No, yeah. Country. No. That's Canned Heat.
Oh.
Country Joe McDonald.
Oh, Country Joe McDonald. Okay.
Yeah. Then Santana performed, and Santana was fairly unknown at the time.
In fact, they had to sort of finagle to get on the bill, as I recall legend going. And. Amazing, amazing performance.
He got paid $750. Yeah. I saw that yesterday.
I have a clip from Michael Shreve, who is the drummer, played the drum kit, because there's three percussionists in the band. Michael Shreve did a drum solo that to this day, it's astonishing. It's just, if you ever go back and watch it, you're like, dude, guy was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Here's a clip of him talking about them performing at Santana.
Bill Graham got us on the bill at Woodstock for $500. We didn't make much money, but it was the biggest break of our career. And ever since then, everything I've ever done since, everybody said, man, I saw your Woodstock. I loved it. I'm walking down Fifth Avenue. People are saying, man, what happened? You got old. I said, man, I was 18 years old. You know, you got old, too.
We do have Santana playing if you want to listen a little bit.
Sure, yeah, go ahead and play a little bit. This is at Woodstock?
That's what Mercer was telling me.
Oh, cool. This is Evil Ways. Got to change your evil ways.
You got to change your evil ways, baby.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Before I stop loving you, you got to change, baby. Every word that I say is true.
So they played about a 45-minute set. And then after them was John Sebastian.
John Sebastian, welcome back.
Yeah,
but he was totally tripping out.
Yeah.
This is so beautiful. Everybody's beautiful. I'm wearing
saying that on stage?
Yeah, that kind of stuff, yeah. Uh-huh. It's like, love it. It's beautiful.
Was he... John Sebastian was in Love and Spoonful, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe so.
He played, and then you had the Keith Hartley Band.
My name is Keith. This is Harry. I'm sorry, I got punched when I was six.
Keith and Theodore
and this is Steve and Fairy. You would probably say Harry.
Mm. Then the Incredible String Band was after that, and performing at 7:30 in the evening was Canned Heat, and they did Going Up the Country. They also did On the Road Again, which is another big hit of theirs. So after them, Mountain came up and played.
Mountain with Leslie West, the great guitarist.
Yep. And then at 10:30 p.m., the Grateful Dead came on. Now, in comparison, a lot of these bands played, you know, like 9, 10, 12 songs. The Dead played 5 songs.
How long did they play
An
for?
Hour and a half.
Oh, my God.
I think I was looking, I think those guys, and there was 1,000 people in that band. I don't know if there was 1,000 at that time, but they got paid like $2,000, $2,500.
I think they were better known. And when you get to like The Who was sort of a crapshoot. They were not, they were less of a draw. But the if you watch the movie, by the way, which is shot in a really interesting way, because there's on the screen there are two screens going, and then so they go to full screen and then small. Yeah, so it's I used to hate it. Now I sort of like it.
Do you?
Yeah,
because it bothered me too.
It bothered the F out of me when it first came out, but now I've come to appreciate it because you're seeing Preston. They are so high.
Oh, I know.
So high.
Yeah, yeah. And
yeah.
Acid and the
right.
whole deal.
How they're even taking the stage at all is miraculous.
So the Dead played from 10:30 till 12 a.m. And then after them came Creedence Clearwater Revival. And here's what John Fogerty had to say about following the Dead.
I didn't think we stole the show. The idea of when you go to play something big like that is there's kind of a gentle competition going on. You try to do your very best. Hopefully, be memorable. But our performance at Woodstock was kind of overshadowed by things beyond our control, mainly having followed the Grateful Dead, and the Grateful Dead had put 500,000 people asleep. We were pretty put upon to wake them all up again.
So, Steve, you've been watching the documentary on this.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you get to the Grateful Dead part?
Yeah, yeah. So there's additional. I forget the different configurations, Casey, because the original theatrical release omitted some bands, and then they're like some are put back in the extended version. There's just hours and hours of footage that was shot.
Yeah, I just wanted to look at the set list from the Grateful Dead. So they started with Saint Stephen. There's a couple of these songs that I don't know. Man, 5 songs, an hour and a half.
Uh-huh.
What's the math on that?
How many songs per minute or how many minutes per song?
90 minutes.
Divided by 5.
18. Yeah.
What's that?
18 minutes.
18-minute long songs?
Yeah.
If there was equality amongst the songs.
Well, yeah, no kidding. Some are longer
than
others,
probably.
There
could have been an 89-minute song and then 4 20 seconds.
Yeah, a medley. Yeah, a medley at the end.
By the way, I said it was in Saugerties. I was way wrong. It was Bethel, New York, which is not in upstate New York at all. So it's actually...
it's pretty southern.
Yeah, it's not too far from... northern Pennsylvania, Scranton, Wilkes-Barre area.
I've been to that area many times. I always got the impression that it was further north.
No, it's way south.
All right, and then after Creedence not going on till 2 a.m., that's when Janis Joplin hit the stage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Was my dad?
Yeah, where was your dad?
what day?
This was.
I just had the best sex of my life.
This would have led into Sunday.
But I think he was gone.
But didn't start till 2 a.m.
2 a.m.
All right, we have a clip of Janis.
Yes, it's her Piece of My Heart.
This is her second to last song in the set, and it wasn't Big Brother and Holding Company. It was with the Cosmic Blues Band.
The Cosmic Kids.
Those are different lyrics.
I'm giving you everything that I ever had to give. Oh, you know I did. But each time I tell myself that I think I've had enough of it, I'm gonna show you, baby, that I want to be covered. For you keep calm on, calm on, calm on, calm on, and take it. Take another little piece of the horn now, baby.
She only lived just a little over a year after that, and she was gone.
I initially was not a big Janis Joplin fan, and then came to appreciate her, and I always think of that iconic footage of her at the Monterey
Pop Festival
with Mama Cass and all the other musicians going oh, my
whoa.
God.
Yeah.
So for a 1969 concert, that's some pretty damn good audio.
I agree.
They mic'd it really well. And
they had, you're right, the fact that they were all as stoned as they were and were able to pull that together. And then the film crew, which is going on, and I remember reading about. So some of the film crew was dressed in black so that they would not distract, but they were literally on the stage walking around the artists as they were getting a lot of this footage.
Because you see, like, the Stones at Altamont and things like that, and it's not great concert footage.
No.
You know, this is much better.
Yeah, and in fact, hang on a second here. I think it was, yeah, pull up the Neil Young clip, Casey, because he talks about, and a lot of these are interviews well past the whole Woodstock experience, but this was Neil Young talking about the film, Steve.
The thing about it that wasn't so beautiful to me was the filming. I thought that these guys with their cameras all over the stage were like in the way of the music and the people, and they were a distraction. We're playing and they're right here, you know, with a camera going like this, and so I told them, you know, don't come near me. I have a very heavy guitar. If you come near me, I'm going to hit you with it. Just stay off my part of the stage and don't let me ever see you. And I got really upset with them right away. And I weighed like 110 pounds at the time, you know, so I was not much of a threat, but I was intense.
You know, but without that movie, I don't know if its legend would have lived, but...
No, the movie...
The accuracy
you're right.
And being able to get a feel for what it was like, it wouldn't exist.
Because that movie went on to become a part of so many midnight screenings and all of these things that let it live on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an Oscar winner. It was huge.
Yeah.
And you're right, Preston. It really helped cement the legend.
So Janis played from 2 to 3 a.m., and then after that, Sly and the Family Stone came on. They were huge
at
the time.
Three?
They went on at
3?
They went on at
3:30.
They
the
switched,
morning.
Though, with the Gibbons kids.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that.
They went on at 3:30 a.m., and they were a big, showy band.
Yes.
You know, Bootsy Collins and everybody. So they played till 4:20 in the morning.
It's just insane.
This is the one that blows me away. So then The Who comes up. They start their set at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. You remember that? Iconic classic Who at Woodstock footage is just an unbelievable. That's 5 o'clock in the morning.
And I remember hearing a story because apparently Jimi Hendrix was off stage watching them and Pete smashes his guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody turns to Jimmy and goes, "That dude's stealing your act right there." You know, because it may have been the first time that I may be way off base. But it may have been about the time that he started smashing stuff. I'm not 100% sure because Jimmy had made his presence known about smashing guitars.
And setting them on fire.
Yeah, all that stuff.
So up to that point, Pete Townsend's thing on stage would be to build basically a Dagwood sandwich.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
While the concert was going on. And it just wasn't resonating with the audience. And because it's just not, you're just making a sandwich. But then when the guitar got smashed, everyone went nuts.
By the way, they diametrically opposed to the Grateful Dead. They played 22 songs. but it says they only played for a little over an hour. But some of those were from Tommy. So they were you know, like they were short.
Like Sparks.
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing.
Yeah, so they did, I guess they did all of Tommy. Yeah, they did all of it, Steve.
Did they?
Because they went through It's a Boy, 1921, Amazing Journey, Sparks, Eyesight to the Blind, Christmas, The Acid Queen, Pinball Wizard, Do You Think It's All Right, Fiddle About, There's a Doctor I've Found, Go to the Mirror, Smash the Mirror, I'm Free, Tommy's Holiday Camp, We're Not Going to Take It. So, yeah, that's
pretty much everything.
That's the whole damn thing, man.
Do you think they slept before that or they stayed up all night?
Probably they're rock stars.
Yeah.
That's probably when they're the most awake.
My guess is they went to church first and then
So the day wasn't over. There was a little bit of a break there, and then Jefferson Airplane came on at 8 a.m.
8 a.m.
And they did their show. And
could you imagine attending a full-blown festival rock concert at 8 a.m. at 5:30 in the morning?
So they played till 9:40 a.m. So, you know, the sun's fully up at that point. And after that, then
everyone's having their Pop-Tarts.
That leads into Sunday into Monday. And then the first band to play that day was a band called the Grease Band. I don't know who that is.
Grease Man.
The Grease Band. They only played two songs.
They did Grease Lightning and Beauty School Dropout.
Speaking of.
Then
Sha-na-na was at the
they came later. They came later in the show than I thought they did. I thought they were one of the first bands to play, but they weren't. They were near the end. At 2 p.m., Joe Cocker came on.
Great classic performance.
Absolutely. And he ended with a little help from my friends, you know, which is just an awesome, awesome version. But within his set, you know, he did Feeling All Right and
Oscar Mayer song.
The Oscar Mayer Wiener song.
Question about that.
I wish I was an Oscar Mayer Wiener. You want to be a wiener?
God, I love Joe Cocker, man.
Did
he's so good.
Yeah.
He was.
Prior to that performance, was the his version of the Beatles song known, or was that like the first time?
I think it was. It's just a great version.
Yeah.
After Joe's set, a thunderstorm came in and disrupted the event for 40 minutes.
I also love
in one of the hippies being interviewed, he's like, they're seeding the clouds, man. Yeah. I saw a plane fly over and they're seeding the clouds. They don't want this to happen.
It's already happening, bro. Mm-hmm. It's been happening for 2 days.
And they had to admonish the people, hey, you may want to climb down those huge metallic towers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, Joe Cocker was in the Grease Band.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
So he's the one who sang Beauty School Dropout.
Okay. Was that, yeah.
Brandon a fool.
And Marissa had some clips, like some of the classic clips. So we have the,
The No Rain?
No, not the No Rain, but the Brown Acid.
Yes. Hang on a second. I knew where that is.
All right. See if you can put,
yep,
yeah.
There it is.
Here you go. Here's one of the classic announcements.
To get back to the warning that I've received, you may take it with however many grains of salt you wish, that the brown acid that is circulating around us is not specifically too good. It's suggested that you do stay away from that. Of course, it's your own trip, so be my guest. But please,
it's your own trip, so be my guest.
If you want to have that, also we're hearing that the fudgy wudgy bars have heroin in them.
Suggested that you do stay away from that. Of course, it's your own trip, so be my guest. But please be advised that there is a warning on that one, okay?
Yeah, just a gentle reminder.
By the way, somebody's correcting me. Bootsy Collins was in Parliament Funk. He wasn't in Sly and the Family Stone. For some reason, I thought he was. I was wrong about that.
50 freaking years ago.
Yeah, here we go.
Elliot from Harvard. The hitchhikers you picked up need the pills from your car. Please go to the information station right away.
The hitchhiker you picked up needs the pills in your car.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Lewis Picknick.
Making stage announcements. They have some headlights
by the
on.
Way, someone says they've lost their peace button, peace symbol button.
Yeah.
Lewis Pitnick, your brother is in the Paulsburg police station.
Okay. Your brother's in the police station.
Right.
All right, so after that, so that was 2 o'clock in the afternoon that Joe Cocker played. He played till about 3:30. Then there was a break because of the thunderstorm. Country Joe and the Fish played at 6:30 that night.
I had no idea there was 2 Country Joes.
Yeah, there were a couple of Country Joes.
And they made them fight in the Octagon, too.
Folks are going to see something special. Rarely you get 2 bands with country in their names duking it out.
Country Joe.
Let me play a couple of clips from Pete Townsend talking about it, because I had mentioned that they played that really long set. But here was, I don't know what order these are in, but let me just play them.
Height order. Here.
It was about the most important single concert that we ever did. It was much more important than Monterey, much more important than our first show in New York, much more important than anything that followed.
Yeah, right. Speaking of Monterey, I think maybe that was with the Jimi Hendrix and him smashing the guitar thing where he said...
Yeah, where he lit it on fire.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hendrix sets his guitar on fire at Monterey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then he microwaves it. Well before the technology
but the Monterey Pop Festival was before this, and I was saying that the guy was saying to Hendrix, this guy's stealing your act because he was up there smashing the guitar stage. So
what I felt was, I'm not American. I'm not part of this. I had a rotten time. I wanted to go home. I didn't want to be there in the first place. You know, what history has told me is that this is my country as an artist.
Okay, so he didn't have a very good time. Then here was another clip from Pete.
That was a bit contrived, because actually it was me that looked at my watch and realized that if we kept listening to you, I'd get the music going long enough, the sun would come up.
Oh, because I think that it was running like 12 hours behind.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a showbiz family, and I know that stuff. And I knew it would be a wonderful moment. And we had been waiting a long time to perform. But we did play Listening to You, I Get the Music something like 40 times. Round and round and round and round. And finally it peeped up. So it wasn't exactly a poetic moment for me, but it was just another kind of moment of cynical English triumph.
Okay. After... was that that played? That was after Country Joe and the Fish. Then you had 10 Years After.
10 Years After, a great band.
Yeah. They played for about an hour or so. They only played six songs. So they had some longer songs. By the way, it was 50 years ago today. That's why we're going through this, the Woodstock.
It's retrospective.
Yeah. And then, Steve, talking about legendary, the band played.
Yeah.
At 10 p.m. And they did almost a 2-hour set. No, I'm sorry. They did almost an hour set. So
in 2-hour increments.
In 2-hour increments, they did a 1-hour set.
Wow, that's.
But they did play. They played The Wait, and then a bunch of songs I don't know.
I love Don't Do It. I love that song. That's what they did. I'm looking at their set.
Okay. Did they do The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down?
No. No, they did not. That's a great song, too. Johnny Winter, featuring his brother Edgar Winter on three songs, got up and played. And that was at midnight. And then after they played, Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Another great band.
Came on at 1:30 a.m. Yeah, then you're starting to really hit the big names as you're moving through here. After them, yeah, go ahead.
You would have to be on narcotics to take in the show this.
Oh, my God. Then at 3 a.m., Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young hit the stage. Wow. They opened with Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. Mm. They first did an acoustic set, and then they did an electric set. So they went on at 3, and apparently they only played an hour, it says here, but they played, God, they did 9 acoustic songs, and then they did 5 electric songs, and they did 2 acoustic encores.
There's some bad strudel being passed around there. The icing isn't right.
It got a little more, you know, throughout the morning when breakfast pastries were being dispensed. Besides the drugs, there were other things.
But they didn't go until 3 o'clock in the
3 o'clock in the morning is probably not optimum concert time.
And that was their second show ever. I think we were saying earlier in the week.
Oh,
maybe
I thought it was their first.
No, it was their second show ever together. Okay. And it was, according to this article, it was Baptism by Fire at the Woodstock Festival.
Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, they did Blackbird by the Beatles, Marrakesh Express. They did Long Time Gone, Wooden Ships. So they, you know, they were a big, big part of it. What do you have here, Casey?
This is Sweet Judy Blue Eyes.
Oh, live? What's that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please rise with us. Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young.
It's getting to the point where I'm no fun anymore.
I love Stevie.
Sometimes it hurts so badly I must cry out loud. I'm lonely.
I need to go back and learn more about that group because they, you know, they went in and out with members and
yeah.
And I don't know how long they recorded before they eventually performed live, because I had always thought of Sweet Judy Blue Eyes as something that came deeper into their life.
Yeah,
as a group, because it was such a huge piece of music.
I think it was Joni Mitchell.
Three songs put together.
Heard them harmonizing on somebody's porch, and that's as the legend goes, and said, you know, you guys, they all came from other successful bands, Buffalo Springfield and other bands.
Their first record came out in May of that year. So they'd only been together for a few months. They did a gig in Chicago, and then they said, we're doing some place called Woodstock, which they'd never heard of.
Wow.
And that was their second gig. And but it really was tumultuous. I mean, you know, you can learn at the knee of Pierre if you're interested in Preston, because he knows everything about the band. It's his favorite band.
Mm-hmm.
But it is fascinating to see how much they love each other and how much they hate each other.
Yeah.
And there's a book out right now by a guy named David Brown. He's a writer for Rolling Stone, and he wrote about the history. I've been reading some of it, and it's they created some incredible music, and they just loathed each other personally at different points in time.
Yeah, yeah.
You just got to take it for what it's like. Dark Star is one of my favorite songs. You know, the Stephen Stills Dark Star.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, acoustically, his playing is amazing.
Then after them at 6 a.m., Paul Butterfield Blues Band went on. After that, and this, then I was surprised to see this second to last performance was Sha Na Na.
Sha Na Na came on second to last,
7:30 a.m. They went on and they did "Get a Job," "Come Go With Me," "Teen Angel." You know, all these old doo-wop songs, yeah, which is what they did.
It's wild to see Bowser. Remember Bowser up on stage doing the whole posing and everything,
Duke of Earl and all, yeah, that stuff. So they went on till 8 a.m. and then your wrap up, your headliner. Jimi Hendrix closed at 9 a.m. I knew it was, I didn't know it was that early in the morning. I didn't, yeah, know that was going on. But 9 a.m. is when Jimmy went on, and he played for over 2 hours. He played 2 hours and 10 minutes. So Jimmy was a dude who could go on stage for a while. And, you know, they did everything. Purple Haze, Fire, Voodoo Child, all that stuff.
Banana Splits theme.
Yep, yeah, they did that. No, Foxy Lady. And the last song played it at Woodstock was "Hey Joe," and that was his encore. Yeah, and of course he did the national anthem, yeah, as well, which is a big part of the film. Is this it? Yeah. So, can you imagine, man? And it just grew and grew and grew, and it's legend over the years after.
I would have lasted like the first two bands that, yeah, would have been in. It's very dirty.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember the clip from The Simpsons where Homer's dad went to Woodstock?
Yeah.
And he was all pissed that Jimmy was playing. Homer's dad, Abe, was like, "Bring out Bowser from Shawnee."
Are you serious?
Yeah. The funny clip from The Simpsons.
I love it, man. Wow. Well, they don't make them like that anymore. I can't think of anything that would eclipse that in its impact.
But it became that, so a lot of these bands really became what they were as a product of Woodstock. So, yeah, like going into it, you saw a list of bands, okay. And then the stuff became the legend that it was after.
Yeah. It was like Michael Shreve was saying from Santana, people didn't know who they were before, yeah, that.
It was funny to see the attempt this year and just how miserably it failed.
They did get Matchbox 20.
It was supposed to be today. On Arlo Guthrie's site, he's touring this year. It still has August 15th. Arlo will be playing at Woodstock 50. Didn't happen.
I guess the only thing that I can think of anyway that would come close to matching that legend would be Live Aid.
Yeah. Live Aid is another story. I'd like, honestly, and there is... There's a ton of footage was recorded. There's no definitive. Is there a definitive documentary?
I don't know.
I don't remember if there is.
Sure as hell should be.
Right.
You know, I mean, there was. You had the US Festival was another big highlight, and that was kind of weird. But I would say Live Aid, because it was in two locations simultaneously, and the charity aspect of it,
yeah,
and the biggest name bands you can imagine at that time.
Well, Bohemian Rhapsody has certainly brought... Mm. I mean, the fact that the entire last, 22 minutes of the movie is performance.
Yep.
What's, I think, most amazing about what happened 50 years ago today is how, and maybe not in the eye of the promoter or as far as profits are concerned, but how sloppy, but successful this was.
Yeah.
Well, we're watching the footage of Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, and at that point it's just Crosby, Stills, and Nash. You got to remember, this is a time before in-ear monitors. Mm-hmm. This is a time before the technology was really,
oh my God,
rudimentary. Dude,
you could barely keep guitars in tune at that time.
Yeah.
They didn't have the technology to keep guitars tuned the way they are now. And, yeah, they made it work, you know?
And it just seemed more pure. Obviously, I think the promoters wanted to make money off of it and all that sort of stuff. But, like, now... these concert promoters, they have it down to a science, but again, it's I don't want to say disingenuous is maybe not the right word.
It's more material.
It's, yeah.
Yeah. No, I know what you're saying.
More surface and...
Yeah. Yeah. Not that they weren't trying to make a buck on this as well, but...
The crowd determined that at a certain point it would become a free concert.
But there was a certain idealism behind it as well. So.
And that's kind of what happened with Woodstock 99 is they were... It seemed like they were only trying to make a buck.
Yeah, everyone's complaining about prices of water and stuff like that. And
were you at that one?
I was at that one.
And that one got scary.
I mean, I mean, you saw it happening. I mean, from the first day to the last night, you saw the descent into madness. You knew it was happening. They never clean the freaking porta pots. They never cleaned the porta pots. They were charging like $10 for water. It was ridiculous. But like, you know, and my girlfriend at the time, she, you know, she had nowhere else to go to the bathroom. Like, I mean, people
nowhere else to go.
I mean, people were literally crapping in pizza boxes in their tents.
No,
like, there was no
concert that happened to me once. Mm-hmm. It was at a Tony Bennett show. Preston,
you were crapping in a pizza box.
I had to crap in a pizza box. I said never again.
Look
at this guy up here. Reminds me of San Francisco.
I was gonna say Tony
taking a dump in a pizza box, just like the streets of San Francisco.
Right at home. How many people were at that Woodstock? Any idea?
200, right?
200 people. I would say probably close to 100,000, okay. Something like that.
Imagine, yeah, that times four. That's what the original Woodstock was. Four. That's a big freaking number. You look at Wembley Stadium and how gigantic those crowds are. Imagine 400,000 people.
What concert or performance? I know. Carrot Top in Rio was 900,000.
Mm. That was a lot, though.
Yeah. But otherwise, I don't know. What is the largest attended concert? You know, we're not talking multiple concert event like Live Aid. One stage, one concert performance or festival, largest attended.
It was in Rio, Steve. It's,
Carrot Top?
No, Rod Stewart. An estimated 3.5 million people at Copacabana Beach. Yeah.
Wow.
3.5 million people?
Okay. Yeah.
No, thank you.
You know what? You get good seats, though. You're in the first million.
Hold on a second here. What are these other ones?
3.5 million watched or on premises?
This is New Year's Eve, 1994.
Free concert.
Free show, yeah.
All right, yeah, yeah. The largest was that, yeah. And then you had in Moscow, Jean-Michel Jarre.
Mm-hmm.
With 3.5 million.
He's
well.
Basically the Russian Bowser from Sean on
Then again, in Moscow, AC/DC, Pantera, Metallica, and the Black Crowes, 1.6 million.
It's just crazy.
And then down a little bit further on that list, it says Live 8 with 1.5 million.
We were there.
Philadelphia Museum of Art. That's correct.
Look at that.
Okay, wow. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4. That's the fifth largest. That's pretty damn impressive, folks. That beats out the Rolling Stones in Rio. Another one in Rio. How about that?
Rio's the place for your massive concert.
And there. Then at the bottom of the list here, Independence Day concert, July 4th, 1985. The Beach Boys at the Philadelphia Museum of Art drew 1 million people. All right. So there have been crowds that big before. Pretty wild, man. Is Woodstock even on here, Nick?
They spit at Woodstock. Those numbers.
Highest attended concerts. Single artist concerts and then free concerts. Well, okay, whatever. How about festival shows? All right. Nonetheless, 50 years ago today, that's when it happened. Pierre's been dabbling with it the past few days. I'm sure he's going to dive into more of that today.
He's clearly the definitive source for all that information.
Absolutely. All right, keep in mind, we have the emoji code, your chance to win a $1,000 Best Buy gift card, along with some very cool Avengers stuff. Check the emoji code at PrestonandSteve.com. I'll ask you to call in if you can decipher it a little bit later on. So we'll get closer to that in a second, but... you know what I should do? Let me give away, since we're talking so much about music, I have a musical event that I would like you to go to. And it's Pair Tickets to join Marissa Magnata for a special campfire-style acoustic performance of Cage the Elephant.
Yeah!
Before doors open on their show with Beck Wednesday the 21st at BB&T Pavilion. We'll take caller number 17 at 215-263-WMMR. It's part of MMR's Rock Residency. You can visit WMMR.com for details, including special ticket prices starting at $19.33. So we will take that 17th call and give you tickets. Going to come back in a moment, and we'll have a comedian, John Roy, who's going to be at Helium Comedy Club, joining us in just a second. Stay put.
Best burger in all of Philadelphia. Taste for yourself at this year's Burger Brawl in a brand new spot.
Round one. Fight.
Join 93.3 WMMR at the Navy Yard Sunday, September 15th and enjoy unlimited bites of burgers from the city's top restaurants. Proceeds benefit the Fund for the School District of Philadelphia, a nonprofit supporting school literacy programs through technology. Tickets on sale now. Get complete details and all the ingredients for a great day at WMMR.com. Burger Brawl 2019. Let's go a few rounds.
93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
All right, thanks, Kath. Our next guest is performing for the first time in Philadelphia at Helium Comedy Club tonight. Gang, please give a welcome to John Roy.
Yeah!
Who is here?
You shouldn't have.
How are you, John?
I'm good.
Nice to see you. So, first time in Philadelphia.
First time in Philly.
You've never visited, never been driven through? Or...
I've stopped in the train station to go to Atlantic City.
Okay.
That's kind of like, I can stay here. I don't know why I have to leave necessarily. But, yeah, this is my first time actually performing in the city.
Okay, cool, man.
For the longest time, I mean, when we first started, there was really no comedy scene, you know, and it kind of gone, you know, like David Brenner had, like, you know, there was just not a lot of stuff going on. Helium brought it all back.
That's good.
Yeah. So there's we get a lot more people coming through and going, oh yeah, Philadelphia's on the map again. Yep. You know, because we end up being the redheaded stepchild for either New York or what they bypass. Mm. Preston often points out that on meteorological maps of the country, they just leave out Philadelphia.
It's like, on the national map.
You'll learn your weather from those other guys. Just ask them. You told them.
There's
ask
New York.
Boston.
There's New York and there's D.C. and there's Boston.
Yeah.
We're left
like, what
out.
The F? You're fine.
Yeah, it sucks. But anyway, you were just telling us you've been on the road for a little while.
Yeah.
And you get to take a break in September,
yeah,
which is cool.
Yeah, I'm happy.
Yeah. And where are you from, by the way?
I grew up in Chicago on the north side. That's where this accent comes from.
I didn't
know I had an accent, though, until I moved to California. And 12 store clerks in a row, I told them my name was John. They go, Chad? What? Did you mean Chad? Alexa, did he say Chad? California brain, just this A sound, just their CPU melts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not an accent. And I'm not, look, it's a horrible accent.
Like, I prefer it, though. I find the one that can be grating when it's a really arch version is the Bostonian accent.
Yeah, the Boston's.
Chicago sounds warmer to me.
It does, but it also makes anything you say sound dumber than you are. Like, you imagine your surgery, like, yeah, we're going to take the appendix out. We're going to go in there with the, like, wait, hold on. Can we get a guy from, like, I don't know, England to do this? Shouldn't you be talking about sandwiches?
I don't mean to sound insulting, but when you just did the over-the-top accent, you sounded kind of like Wallace Shawn.
Inconceivable. I think the most pure Chicago accent is weirdly Dennis Franz from NYPD Blue.
They never explained
why he was there. Like, yeah, you know, I was at O'Hare. I got a layover. I can't go to New York to be a cop.
If you watch in Die Hard 2, he's got that.
Yeah,
it's completely.
I'm like, you're not from New York, dude. I don't know how you passed the police exam. Like,
well, you know where he's from? Is he from the Midwest?
He's got to be. That accent doesn't come out. I mean, you have to have, like, born in a bear sweater to talk like that.
So you started doing stand-up there.
Yeah, in
obviously.
Chicago.
Yeah.
And he's from Illinois.
It's the only way. Like, it doesn't happen if you're not.
You can't fake that. But you also, you've done a lot of writing, and we were talking about conscious stuff and so on and so forth. You did the Jeff Ross,
Jeff Ross. Yeah, I was writing on the Jeff Ross, the Queen, the Freddie Mercury episode.
Of the historical roast.
Yeah.
It's a cool concept. You know, when I first thought, I was like, I don't know about this. And then I started to watch more of them. Like, okay, you're taking classic historical figures and giving them a Friars Club roast.
Yeah, it's exactly it. And then that Freddie Mercury one, we had, Seth Green played David Bowie.
Who did the Freddie?
Freddie was my friend James Adomian, my writing partner.
He's great.
He was brilliant.
He nailed it.
Yeah,
like,
and
he really did.
It was funny, but it was also a really good tribute to Freddie Mercury and a really good singing voice, too. I was impressed.
Well, he practiced that song a lot. Like, that, you know, like all day long he was doing that one.
By the way, he does a killer Chris Matthews.
That's one of the videos I wrote with him. There's a Hardball Canada, if people want to see Chris Matthews. It's Chris Matthews talking about Canada. And, his Matthews is really great.
But are you a Queen fan to begin with?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, I had all that. Because, like, I'm 45, right? So when I went to high school, it was when they were phasing vinyl out. They didn't know it would be back.
Yeah.
So I would walk into a record store with $10, and I could buy the entire Queen catalog. You know, $2 an album.
Right.
I'm like, you guys have Kiss? Like, yeah, here's all of Kiss. That'll be $12.95, please. I came out with just this record stash that today, each one of those things would cost you $25 at your basic hipster
vinyl store. And, you know, I'm like, what do you have by Prince? They're like, we have everything he ever did. 8 bucks, please. You know?
Yeah, you know what? I went for my birthday. Marissa in the other room there had gotten me a turntable. I was like, wow, this is fantastic. So I got it set up at home and everything. And I didn't have any records. So I went to a record shop to go buy them, and I was looking at new records, and I pulled one up, and I haven't bought records in ages.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, this is $30. Yeah. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me?
We got a record player, and I wanted to get Quadrophenia, which I've now bought 9 times. Yeah. You're welcome, Mr. Daltrey.
You always do.
Yeah, I'm like, I got to get Quadrophenia. It was $25.95.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I bought this literally for like $1.75. And yeah, maybe, you know, the dirty job scratched. But aside from that, you know, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
So you're buying it at the end of vinyl phase.
Yeah.
I was still, you know, firmly entrenched in vinyl territory when I was buying a lot of my initial music. But even then, price, what was it, like $7 And then if you got it in what they used to call the cut bin, so they would cut the record jacket, there'd be a little like little tiny rectangle, that'd be discount. But now, of course, because it is now in the hipster mode.
Yeah.
But it does have a people swear by the sound. Pick up $30, $40, $50
yeah,
for an
also,
album.
Swearing by the sound, yeah, if you have the insane stereo Marc Maron bought, then yeah. Right. But if you have the Crosley thing you bought next to the pants at Urban Outfitters, like, it's going to sound like a record. Yeah. It's going to sound like some kid's Fisher-Price Star Trek record. You know?
Did you have this, and we used to talk about this all the time, because when you'd listen to that stuff over and over again, you would get your iconic scratches and pops.
Sure.
And then when you heard it somewhere else... Like, where's the pop? Where's the scratch?
And the little things that you didn't really notice until you get it like on a good stick. Because I didn't, you know, stuff you're like, oh, Jimmy Page just talks right there. I didn't, or Pink Floyd, there's always weird stuff in the back. Like,
right.
Is that a dying sloth in the back of time? I didn't notice that before. When
What'd you think of the Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie?
I liked it. I did. I mean, it's biopics are weird for me because, especially if someone that's famous as those guys, where you've seen more pictures of the actual person than the actor. So, like, Will Smith, I'm like, that's not Muhammad Ali. That's Will Smith in a boxing outfit. So with Queen, I just kept going, all right, that's not Freddie. Like, that's a different guy. But I thought not being able to bring Freddie back from the dead and stick him in a costume, I thought it was great.
Yeah,
I'm still waiting to see the Elton John one. I haven't seen that yet either.
I
hear that's good.
Yeah.
You always work the it's a tightrope though, because if you're, you know, either you're doing an homage or an impression.
Yeah, how do you keep it from not being so over the top that it looks like a Saturday Night Live sketch?
Right. Speaking of the way you looks and so on and so forth, I was watching one of your routines. It's kind of true. You're a video gamer?
Sure, yeah.
Right. You talk about, and it's the truth, and it's something that I do all the time. When you're a ball guy and you select your avatar in a video game, I just hit enter because the first guy up is ball.
Yeah, there you go. Now, I give him hair. I have to. I'm like, if I'm going to be in a fantasy, I might as well give this guy hair. If I'm going to put myself on the Dodgers, I could also give him a big curly afro.
Do you play a lot? Do you sink into a video game hole, or have you had to ratchet back with a life and wife?
Well, you know what? Honestly, my wife plays Overwatch on a competitive level.
Really?
Like, my wife is much better than me.
You know,
my
wife plays. Esports Center coming into Philadelphia. I think it's Overwatch.
I mean, well, Overwatch is a huge game. Like, it's like 15 million people watch their Twitter feed every week.
Yeah.
There's like TV shows that don't get 1 million.
Yeah.
Imagine putting a TV show on the air and 12 million people are like, I'd rather watch someone else play a video game. 40 million are like, I'd rather watch him open the box the video game came in.
Yeah.
My wife is incredible at Overwatch. She's on the beta test now of the new rules because they're like, you're really good. You should probably. You know, she plays Moira and she plays D.Va, and that's not going to mean anything unless like way into the game. But it's, you know, it's impressive to watch. And she bought a headset.
With the microphone.
She's like just sitting there, she has like a rough day at work. She's like, yeah, I got to kill stuff. I got to go home and kill stuff.
What's her day job?
She works for a cosmetics company. She's a traveling educator. Like, she goes and tells them how to sell. It's a Benefit Cosmetics is her brand, and
super girly.
Yes, and then comes home and kills stuff, because I think there's just a girly limit that you can take, and then once you've gone over it, like, it's time to murder cartoon characters.
So did you actually meet her, or did you order her online?
She was part of the Overwatch buy for a 2-for-1 to get the. We'll set you up with a wife that'll work.
Do you even play her in any competitive games? On because she'll kick your ass. Right?
You know, I don't. You can't play head to head. Like you can only play other people online. So I don't. But, like, the thing with I've told her about the game. And for about 6 months, like, I'm like, oh, you're playing. Oh, that's nice. Oh, you're not on the training level anymore. Oh, you're better than me. that was a weird. But she's really competitive. She played college athletics. She played college golf at Purdue. So she likes to win. Like, and her dad was a state trooper. So, like, the whole family's just this, like, driven, like, winning. Like, there's a, in the Schramm family, they go, I'm like, well, isn't it just for the fun of the game? She goes, you know what's fun? Winning.
That's that. Wow. She played D1 golf.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does she still play?
She still plays. I think it's more, we're at the, like, the top golf level now. Like, I don't know. She'll go out and do 9 holes when her sister's in town, but she doesn't get, like, her job is, they send her all over the place. Like, it's hard to, like, get a whole day
to
go play golf.
Yeah, but if she played D1 golf, she could probably still easily shoot in the low 80s, most likely.
She is good. Yeah. Like, I know that. I mean, I'm terrible at golf. Like, I'm like, how to not hit it in the water? Like,
aim for the water. That's how you don't hit it in the water. Aim for the water.
Then you'll win.
That's wild that you have that going on. I was reading a little bit about you. You never know what's true or not, but was your dad an ex-Jesuit priest?
My dad was. He was a brother. He didn't get the ordination where you have the superpowers to change, you know, water into,
and exorcisms.
I think he could. He took, like, all the crappy vows. He took poverty, obedience. Like he had all the ones that you don't want.
The cool ones.
But then he quit to marry my mom, which is good because they don't let you do that.
And your mom's a psychotherapist?
Yeah. Well, they're retired now. I mean, she was a psychotherapist back then.
That's a a wild combo.
Yeah, when you can be told clinically what's wrong with you as a kid. No, why don't you clean your room? Well, no, I'll tell you why. It's in the DSM-4 right here. You're
Both of them probably on one level or another received confessions.
Yeah. It's all my mom's whole job is basically sit on that couch and. Tell me why you're here.
But that probably helped your ability to just observe things.
And to like from an early age you get presented with like, well, this is how I think it works and this is how I think it works, and then you're a comedian going, I think all of this is nonsense.
you're probably giving out better therapy than they are.
Well, you get 2 drinks with my therapy too. So
that's the medication. Yeah, that's the prescription.
Like, I think a lot of more people would go to confession if there's a gin and tonic in there. I mean, father might have one, but...
would it hurt them to have a little mini bar in the confessional?
A comedian and a psychotherapist, they're both observant of human behavior, and like the best comedians are able to point out foibles and behaviors in a comedic way.
Yeah.
Did you learn any of that from your mom?
A little bit. I think my mom, when you're a kid, it's not so much fun when your mom points out your foibles.
You would think she'd want to like try to put, tap the brakes on that because to get too clinical with your own kid, but I mean, how would you stop it if you're trained to do that?
Well, if you got to bring work home, at least she wasn't a cop.
Arresting
you. I got to deal with.
Let me ask you, because I wanted to bring this up, and I don't know if this is true or not. The Chris O'Dowd movie, was it
Love for Love? Yeah,
right. And he's a comedian, right?
Yeah. Well, and James Adomian's in that too. He plays his brother, and he does stand up at the end. And I wrote a lot of the stand up for that.
So every time, like in the movie Punchline or wherever actors doing stand up.
Barry Sobel was a guy who wrote all the stand up and Punchline.
Yeah, it's never quite. It's hard, right? It's hard
They're not stand ups.
Yeah.
Like, and there is a rhythm of stand up that just can't be faked in this. Like
Sally Field in that movie. She's a good comedic actress, but it's a different skill set.
Yeah, Tom Hanks comes pretty, but they actually made. But in some of those stand up movies, like. In Funny People, like Seth Rogen has
was
never
a stand-up.
Done
stand-up. He never done before
a little
that?
Bit, not okay. much. Him and Jonah Hill, though, Apatow forced them to go to every comedy club in L.A. and do stand-up every night for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So, like, he made him do it. He's just like, you have to do it. There's no other way to know.
Right.
So you'd be in the club, and you know, some of the comedians would grumble, like, why do I got to wait while Jonah Hill gets to do stand-up fantasy camp because he's in a movie? he would go up at least... To his credit, he did it. He went up there and bombed at the improv.
Wow.
And then eventually he got some laughs because he's a funny guy.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things that, you know, stand-up needs hours and hundreds of hours of game time before you know what you're doing. You know, there's no way to fake it.
There's a precision to it, and to the people that do it well, like yourself, and you know, I saw, and that's why for me it's you have to be really committed and tinker and tinker and tinker and tinker, and it can be really time consuming.
I've always wanted to do stand up. These guys know this. I'm just not brave enough to get up there and do it. But I hosted a stand up comedy competition at Helium one time. And I was like, oh, you know what? I'm gonna try something out, right? So what's funny is I got a really big laugh at my setup, right?
Yeah.
Like it was, and then when I got to the punchline, nobody even laughed at that, and like everybody laughed at the setup. I was like, oh, that was the funny part. Okay, well, I had no idea.
And if you were a stand-up and you knew you had to go back and do it again because that's your job,
right?
You would then have cut the punchline that didn't work. Because like stand-up's basically like you take a steak out from the kitchen, you see what they take bites of, you cut away the rest, and you serve it again to the next group of people.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, you would have then had 15 more tries at that bit.
Right.
And by the end, you would have figured out what they liked and what they didn't like, and it would have worked.
It's the oldest thing. Writing is rewriting.
Yeah, that's all it is.
So do we want to hear this?
No.
No? You gotta laugh.
No.
Do you remember it?
I do. I do remember it.
Okay.
The setup was like, hey, did you guys ever see this movie called Star Wars?
And they were like, yes! Yeah. My favorite movie.
Oh, not a good joke.
Yeah.
So there's a show on Amazon, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yeah.
And it's basically, and what I really like about that is her crafting the punchlines and it's like quick jump cuts from okay, oh, this didn't get the laugh, all right, let me, you know, and it's her just sort of honing her act.
That's exactly what it is.
They're able to do it in, you know, a 30-second montage, and you know, and
yeah right,
but you know, realistically,
rather than a 30-month montage of you eating ramen noodles while you go to your dog walking job, that's the part they leave out.
And yet, John, the anomaly is you'll have something that has killed and killed and killed, and then you'll be one night and you'll do it exactly the way you've done it all the time before, and it just dies.
It's true.
It's true.
And also, you can watch a joke die. Like, you can watch the reference no longer be in the public eye. There was this guy in Chicago who used to crush with these bits about the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had all these punchlines about Bruce Jenner and all this stuff. And then you could watch the audience slowly not be old enough to remember it. So this thing that used to bring the house down and end with the 70s guitar from waka, 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 you know, and everyone used to go crazy. Same bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, it would be like watching Metallica come out and do Master of Puppets, and then all of a sudden the crowd doesn't like it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What is that? And then he didn't know what to do now. And you watched him struggle for 6 months of going, well, the 70s bit's dead. And that was my bread and butter. It would be, you know, it's something that I think musicians never have to deal with. No one going to buy tickets to Sting is ever going to be like, nah, not Roxanne. I think I've heard that enough,
right?
Yeah, like, but
don't play the hits.
Yeah, right.
Play new stuff.
I want to hear the thing you just put out.
It's funny, though. So for you writing for other people, you've got to write in their voice. Did you write for Jeff Dunham?
I did. I wrote for Jeff Dunham.
That's got to be different.
It was, well, I got high. I got really high. But I was like, how am I going to write puppet jokes? Like,
yeah.
All right, well, I've got this weed right here. That might help. the thing with writing.
Did it?
Yeah, it did. It absolutely did. Like, everything.
Did you have
the
puppet smoke or did?
Yeah. Could you give Peanut a hit too? I think this joke will be better. I think Walter needs to loosen up a bit. The Dunham thing was weird. Like, but seriously though, everything that on Mining the Monsters, and I wrote about, we had a whole writer's room, but I wrote about a quarter of that. every joke I wrote, I was high. Like, every, the whole Walter monologue and most of Bubba J was written by a very high man.
So you have this pre-done characters that he's done, the old guys.
Yeah, that's a little easier to do because you know, like, okay, Bubba J is a redneck, so every bit I write, just write what would a redneck say.
Right, right.
But the thing with writing for Dunham that you don't get as a comedy writer is that he has to say all that without his lips moving.
Yeah, yeah.
So we would pitch him jokes, and they were good jokes, but then he'd be like, yeah, that BR sound is weird for me. Can you change brisket to steak? You know, and you're like, yeah, okay. But, like, it's just, like, stuff you would never think of because you get to use your whole mouth.
Yeah.
That's, his comedy is not necessarily my cup of tea, but I appreciate what he's able to accomplish and the number of tickets that he's able to sell.
Well, sure. Well, he actually told us. He goes, look, we're not writing Ruth Chris here. We're writing McDonald's. So let's go out and make some fun puppet jokes. Yeah. And we were like, yeah, all right. He's got a good attitude about it.
But I don't think you can ever be that inherently successful as a comedian without being funny. So he's got to be.
He knows how to hit a punchline. And he knows how to hit a punchline holding a puppet while pretending not to talk.
Dude, right? I was in Vegas a couple years ago. Man, they were going nuts for his.
The audience, like, I don't know what, he's got them fooled. The audience, whenever he pulls a new toy out, they act like a new person showed up.
Yeah.
So they give each puppet an ovation. Like, I'm like, that's him with a different thing. Like, they act like a new member of the Jacksons showed up. Like, they're like, yeah! You know, like it's still just him. He just pulled a different
thing
out.
He stuck his hand up another ass.
Like, what's wrong with you people?
They don't even give the puppet a microphone.
Like, oh, it's Peanut. I'm like, yeah, he pulled out a different thing.
Inanimate object.
That's hilarious.
They act like someone new showed up. Like Peanut was in the limo backstage and then he came up the thing into the trunk.
Yeah, I think that they don't have a microphone sort of hurts it.
Like, wait a second. How can I hear him if he doesn't have a microphone?
Can I have a better illusion, Jeff? Could you at least put a fake mic by the purple guy so I can think he's talking?
You're just tuning in as John Roy. Who's going to be at Helium Comedy Club just tonight only, by the way. Are you writing for any other shows or anything going on right now?
Right now, I am actually, I'm working on a new set to give to Conan. Cutting down the 6 minutes to 4.5. And
he's very comedian friendly, isn't he?
I
know that in some cases when you go, now, a lot of times people don't know that comedians have to sort of present their material.
Review. You deal with the booker and you know.
So, but from what we hear is that the Conan crew is a lot more liberal in what they're going
they
to
are
take.
You actually get one S word on Conan, and you can't do that on the network stuff. So it's a good process. They're a fun group. They've been with Conan forever. Everyone's there's job is safe, and they're all having a good time.
Do you think he's digging the new half hour?
He loves
format?
It. Yeah. I mean, one of my good friends is a writer on Conan, Andre DeBouche, and he's like, he goes, yeah, Conan loves it. He was bored of going, so you're in a movie, you know, like he likes having just
cutting
the freedom
chase
to do some fun bits and go home, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's your first exposure doing late night was
my first late night was Craig Ferguson, and then I did Leno, but I had done my first TV, I won Star Search on CBS with Arsenio,
right?
But that was in prime time, so that was, and you only had 2.5 minutes. So my first late night set was Ferguson. I did a couple of those, and then I did Jay Leno.
Is that massive weight of the world on your shoulders moment?
The other thing is now it's even more on your shoulders because the internet, and it's a good thing that you can, anyone who likes what I did on this radio show can go right home and watch my Conan's on the internet, but it's out there forever.
Yeah.
It's not going anywhere. Like, if you had a bad Letterman in 1989, you know, your mom might have been like, but then no one would ever see it again. Yeah. You know, like, it was gone.
It's gone.
But now it's there forever. So, if you had a bad Letterman, you're like, oh, you mean this Letterman here? Like, everyone you met could be like, oh, there you are, not doing well.
It's true. I specifically remembered comedians or whatever bombing through, and they can go back. You say, oh, that they don't have that. That was in the 70s. You go and look on YouTube, and there it is. Somebody had a film of it or something.
Sure.
And if it made someone go, I have to remember this, someone else did. When we first started doing the show and the internet was, you know, okay, we're getting, you do a Google search and two things would come up.
Yeah.
Now there's just been such an input from the world total that, you know, no matter how obscure it is, you can find it. So you're right.
anything will haunt you forever. All the days of your life.
It's just there permanently. Because I remember I was on Hollywood Squares
Bergeron?
No, this was Howie Mandel.
Howie Mandel.
This is a while ago.
Right.
But like I didn't know anything about Howie Mandel. I didn't care, but I was so nervous that they had a camera in my face and they're like, "What does it feel like to work with Howie Mandel?" And I just started going, "Oh my God, I'm so happy to finally work with what a great guy, Howie Mandel." And I'm just gushing over him. And they got it. And my buddy at home, my roommate, DVR'd it. So I came back to Chicago and I was bragging about something, some girl I met or whatever. He goes, "Oh yeah, you're real cool. Yeah, I was just watching you." And he just hits play. He's got it queued up. And I'm like, "Oh, Howie Mandel, I can't believe I got to finally work with the guy from Bobby's World." You know, like, so like before I moved to LA, anytime I overstepped my bounds of like, "Yo, yeah, we were partying. Oh yeah, you were partying. Was this guy partying? Oh, Howie Mandel. Oh my God."
You gotta love friends. Wow. Well, listen, John is going to be, like I said, at Helium Comedy Club just one night only. So make sure you get out and see him at 8 o'clock. Some of the shows, you can get tickets at helium.com. And hopefully this will fuel you to come back in and spend some time in Philly.
Yeah.
Excellent, man. Well, cool. Nice to meet you.
You too.
Enjoy your time here in Philadelphia and the rest of your tour, brother.
I will.
Yeah, man.
Cool. All right, let's hear it for John Roy, guys. Hey! Helium Comedy Club. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay with us.
The Preston and Steve Show Podcast, 93.3 WMMR, everything that rocks.
All right, let's do the B-File.
Now, bizarre. WMMR presents bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
All right, brought to you this morning by Robbins Diamonds in tax-free Delaware with thousands of rings and self-serve cases and absolutely no sales tax versus the 8% tax in Philly. Robbins Delaware Diamonds. Well, a man has been eaten alive by a bear just hours after joking about being attacked and killed by one.
I was joking?
No, the man was joking. Alexander Korneyev was out picking wild mushrooms when a brown bear savagely mauled him in eastern Russia.
Huh.
The 66-year-old only had a penknife to try and defend himself against the powerful animal, but was unable to do so and was eaten alive. When the retired railway construction worker was found, it said that not a single spot was left untouched.
Oh, man.
The lacerated remains of the elderly man were found on a dirt road close to the village where he had lived. After discovering his corpse, locals hunted the bear down and shot it dead. It said the animal still had the man's remains inside its stomach. Residents...
You should have joked about getting a Hummer.
Yeah. Residents... were horrified at the brutality of the attack and were especially shocked as it's in an area where bears have never attacked humans in living memory. Speaking about the attack, the head of the village council, Sergei Rayabov, said there was blood everywhere. His pet knife was broken in half and there were signs of a fight. His body was lying face down. There was no single untouched spot.
By the way, there is now pen knife for sale.
His death was made even more tragic as he had called his wife before the attack and reportedly joked about being killed by a bear.
Ugh.
He had said to her, "I'm going to pick mushrooms, and if you don't call, and if I don't call you again by 10 a.m., it means that I've been eaten by a bear." That's what he said.
Oh my God. Do you guys ever fantasize about? No, but what you would do if you were attacked by a large animal like this?
Go for the eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know that the idea is supposedly you play dead. For a bear attack, isn't that what he does in DiCaprio does?
Oh, in The Revenant?
Right, The Revenant. I don't know. I think I'd be panicking too much.
Yeah.
And I'd be patting around for my penknife.
And it's different for black bears versus grizzlies. You're supposed to behave differently for one versus the other.
Hmm.
But I don't remember what the rules are.
In my mind, I would stick my fist down their throat. Like, so they wouldn't be able to, like, breathe.
You'd actually feed yourself to it.
I would shove my whole arm.
Here, wait, let me see if I can get my shoulders in there.
Thank you so much. You really enjoy.
Because, who knows? I think I've heard things like that, where, like, with a shark or whatever.
Uh-huh.
I know whatever I would do would be wrong.
I don't think sticking your body in its...
All right, let's get a bear in here.
In its maw.
Let's
have
a bear maul Casey and see if he's effective with his sticking his arm down its throat.
So anyhow, this guy was eaten. Now, here's a different story, but involves wildlife as well. It was about 12:30 when Russ Fee woke up to the sound of frantic shouts coming from a campsite next to his in Canada's Banff National Park.
Russ!
From within his tent, he listened, quickly discerning that the voices belonged to a man and a woman. They were screaming for help. He said, "I threw my shoes on. My wife tossed me a lantern. I just started running toward their tent, sort of yelling, 'I'm here, I'm here. What's wrong?'" He expected to find two really scared parents who maybe their child had wandered off into the woods. Instead, the sight that greeted him was much more distressing. The family's tent was in shambles, and sticking out of its entrance was the rear end of a large wolf.
Oh.
A wolf attacked the New Jersey couple and their two children who were visiting the park.
That rarely happens.
They said, "We are forever grateful to Russ, who came to our aid." This is Elisa Rispoli, whose husband Matt was injured in the attack. She wrote this on Facebook, describing Fee as a guardian angel. She added that the Canadian man probably saved her husband's life. The Rispolis were asleep in their tent, and they were jolted awake after midnight by the wolf. She said it was something out of a horror movie. Matt instantly threw himself in front of his wife and the children, fighting the predator as it ripped apart the tent. While the husband was trying to keep the wolf at bay, Elisa wrote that she laid on top of her two boys to shield them, and together the couple cried out for help. Luckily, this guy, Fee, had heard them. When he arrived at the family's campsite, Fee saw the wolf attempting to yank something free from the tent like it was pulling on a toy. She said it was just so much larger than, or Fee said it was so much larger than any dog I've ever seen. So Elisa wrote the animal had started to drag Matt away, and she was holding on to his legs. Fee ran toward the tent, carrying only a lantern his wife gave him, and he devised a hasty plan. He said, "I just kept running at it, and I kicked it in the back hip area like I was kicking in a door. And the kick may not have done much physical damage, but Fee said it was enough to startle the wolf into letting go of Matt. And then the animal immediately emerged from the tent, and Fee said he, quote, immediately regretted kicking the wolf."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He said, "I felt like I had kind of punched someone that was way out of my weight class." But before Fee had to think of another way to take the wolf solo, he said Matt, whose half of his side was covered in blood, came flying out of the tent. The two men began screaming at the wolf and hurling rocks about the size of the head of a cabbage at the animal to drive it back. Soon the wolf was far enough away that they were able to get free and head to Fee's campsite, where they hid in his minivan. Elisa wrote that her husband was transported to the hospital, where the puncture wounds and lacerations on his hands and arms were treated. Parks Canada staff located a wolf about a half mile away. They euthanized it, and DNA tests confirmed the wolf that was put down was the same one that attacked Matt at the hospital.
I can't even remember a time you've reported on a wolf attack.
No.
It's always bear attacks.
Yeah.
Not unless it's a werebear.
And apparently there was no food or anything else that usually attracts wildlife around. They say that...
they say usually that you should fill your pillow with pork chops?
No, they noted that the wolf's physical state may have played a part in the attack. They said that the wolf was in poor condition and likely nearing the end of its natural lifespan. So,
okay, all right.
And unfortunately, that's all we have time for. Yeah, in the Bizarre File. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a second. Emoji code.
Yeah.
Let's get a winner. I'll take caller number 33 at 215-263-WMMR. Do you know the emoji code? Well, if you do, be the 33rd caller. We'll start there and see if we can get a winner. We'll be right back.
Not only can you hear Preston and Steve, you can see them too. Check out the Weekly Rush on Xfinity On Demand. New episodes, you guessed it, weekly.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Police on 93.3 WMMR, a song that's put them on the map, Roxanne. And it is 6 minutes after 10 o'clock, Preston and Steve Show. We're going to have a good time today at the Belly Flop Championship, Belly Forge Casino Resort. 85 degrees. Maybe a slight chance of a pop-up shower, but we don't know where. And
you might get wet.
I'm going to say it's not going to happen there.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fine. I agree with you.
Beautiful night. So come out and join us, please. And wouldn't it be icing on the cake if maybe you won a big prize right about now? We're looking for the emoji code, and I am going to go to our 33rd caller. It is Nicole, who is on the line. Hey, Nicole, good morning to you.
Hi, Skies Rock.
Hey, thank you so much.
I love that.
Nicole, if you can tell us the code that Casey has created with emojis, what it deciphers to, then you will indeed win our prize. So what is the emoji code?
I am what I am.
I am what I am.
Oh, is correct.
Yeah! You got it, Nicole.
What? So
we are going to give you, by the way, we're going to give you, first of all, the limited edition Avengers Assembled Steelbook. We're going to give you all four Avengers films on digital, 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray and Blu-ray, and a $1,000 Best Buy gift card.
Yeah, hey!
So congratulations. Yeah, congratulations. That's awesome. Where are you from, by the way, Nicole?
I'm from Southside, Pennsylvania.
All right. And what are you doing today? You working this morning?
I'm working. My fiancé is going to be so excited.
Are you into the films at all?
I'm sorry?
Are you a fan of the Avengers at all? Are you into this stuff as well?
Yeah, we see every movie. We midnight them all.
Excellent. Excellent.
Right. Well, you're going to love this book and all the movies, and you're going to love the $1,000 from Best Buy.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much. This is so exciting. You guys rock.
Thank you so much. Congratulations. Hang on the line, Nicole. We'll make sure we take care of you. And there we go. We got ourselves a winner.
Sounds very sweet.
Love that. All right. We're now going to do, we're going to get another winner. Only we're going to do the lesson question this time, and we're going to give away a pair of tickets for MMR Rockin' the Zac Brown Band on Friday, September 6th at BB&T Pavilion. So let's see what we want to do. Okay. What modern take on The Old Man and the Sea features a killer clown? 215-263-WMMR. And let's see with you, see if you know the answer. You had to have been listening earlier this morning. What modern take on Old Man and the Sea features a killer clown? 215-263-WMMR. If you know the answer, if you heard it, you were listening, we need you to call in now. We're going to do the trash while you're calling.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
And this morning, the trash is brought to you by Monster Mania. Monster Mania Con 43, August 16th through 18th. See Freddie himself, Robert Englund. Almost said Peter Englund.
Peter Englund.
Clive Barker, Ric
Flair,
your
story?
And more. Tickets available at the door. For more information and more of the gore in store, visit MonsterMania.net. What's going on, Steve?
Well, the Miley Cyrus and Liam Hemsworth split started out amicably, but now both parties are on the offensive, with Cyrus claiming Hemsworth is an alcoholic and Hemsworth claiming that Cyrus was cheating on him. Regardless, both parties do agree that Cyrus is pretty hoary. A tabloid claiming that Daniel Craig's ankle injury on the set of the latest Bond movie is causing problems in his marriage to Rachel Weisz. Apparently, Craig is unable to perform Weisz's favorite sexual position, a Manchester toe jam.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
You imagine what that is.
That
Manchester toe jam. Uh-huh. And finally, Globe magazine is reporting that Cher's friends are seriously concerned that the legendary singer is destroying her career with too many facelifts. Cher says she's thrilled with the results, noting that it's much easier to get her anus bleached now that it's on her chin.
Yeah.
That's your Hollywood trash.
All righty. We'll see if somebody can give us the answer to this lesson question. What modern take on Old Man and the Sea features a killer clown? 215-263-WMMR. That is the question. And why not? I'll go to Brian, see if he knows the answer. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Good. How are you? You guys rock.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it. What modern take on Old Man and the Sea features a killer clown?
I think it was like the clown with the red balloon.
The clown with the red balloon.
He was.
You were listening, but that's not
Yeah,
it.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. No. Let's go to, put that person on line three on hold, please. I'll tell you why, because they've got the right answer. All right.
No. Sort of.
And now.
No. Yeah.
And there you go. I'll go to you. It's Trevor. Hey, Trevor.
Hey, guys.
Hey, you're on the air. Trevor, do me a favor and tell me what modern take on Old Man and the Sea features a killer clown.
The Old Clown and the Sea.
Correct.
Yeah.
Thank you. By the way, he sounded like somebody on Wheel of Fortune making sure they say it correctly. The Old Clown and the Sea.
Right.
pronouncing it very properly. Thank you, Trevor. We are going to give you a pair of tickets as MMR Rock Zach Brown Band on Friday, September 6th, BB&T Pavilion. Some tickets for both of the shows, September 6th and 7th, are still available at Ticketmaster.com. We got to do music news.
Now, Preston and Steve's Music News on 93.3 WMMR.
All right, with a new album on the way, Tool currently has all 10 spots in the positions of 1 through 10 on the Billboard's Rock Digital Song Sales Chart.
10 sounds desperate.
10, you're right. That's because they just recently released their music digitally.
Yeah.
The new release will be nearly 85 minutes of music, consists of 7 songs and 3 interludes with an average of about 12 minutes per song, depending on which version of the album you listen to. Drummer Danny Carey says he originally wanted the album to be one long song instead of 7. He said, when we get in that room, where it takes us, that's where it goes. 4 years ago, when we were looking at this, I wanted to try to do a record that was one giant song. According to...
That's him in the room.
Loudwire, Chocolate Chip Trip is one of the star instrumental tracks standing out as one of Carey's drumming masterpieces.
Chocolate chip trip. I love chocolate chip cookies.
He completed one of the most complicated parts in only one take while the rest of the band was taking a break. Can't wait to hear that because that dude is a beast on the drums.
I'm currently on the final album of my Tool journey. So
what are you thinking? Where do you stand in the Tool appreciation level?
I think it's their best one. I think it's the most complete.
The last one.
I'm on track 9, which is called Intention. So I need to go back and start at that song. Yeah. But so far, because you had told me that that's your favorite album, 10,000 Days.
Yep.
It's not my favorite song is still Prison Sex. I love that song. But this one, I'm enjoying it.
All right. And then you'll get to check out Fear Inoculum, which will be released on August 30th. So you'll be good to go, Case. Ghost is known for creating special limited edition promotional items such as an 8-track edition of Ceremony and Devotion and for Prequel, a 7-inch vinyl disc of the album's first single, Rats. But on September 27th, the Swedish rock band will release several more items tied to the Prequel album and tour. The deluxe collector's edition, Prequel Exalted. You just pop your gum.
I did. I'm so sorry, man. Shoot.
Will include a 60-page arena tour photo book, live photo prints, and limited edition transparent orange and black color vinyl, and several other items. Only 5,000 copies.
I'm such an idiot, man.
Pop your gum.
Yeah.
Blew a bubble and popped his gum.
That would be
right next to the microphone.
Yeah, yeah. Me in the bush hiding from the Viet Cong. Yeah.
Like Bill West.
Sorry. You it's your hands up, they're going to see you.
Yeah.
You pop your gum.
Yeah.
Chinese is going to kill us.
Aerosmith are out on the road all month before hitting Las Vegas again as part of its ongoing Deuces Are Wild residency at Park Theater at Park MGM. The band took out time out to chat with Variety about the shows, with guitarist Joe Perry explaining this has been an incredible opportunity to play a smaller version of regular shows in an intimate seating and a way to present the heart and soul of the band's essence with added elements you wouldn't have ever been able to do in a one night only setting. It's something very different than what we've ever done before, he said.
How long did it take him to say all that?
Dude, I was thinking the same thing. Because last time we had him on the air,
yeah,
it was horrible. He was barely saying anything, and it took freaking ever. So there you go. Probably took him 20 minutes. All right, and then one last thing. It was 50 years ago today, August 15th, 1969, at Woodstock Music and Art Fair began kicking off 3 days of music in Bethel, New York. More than 450,000 people converged upon the small upstate town to hear rock's biggest bands perform.
Only to be eclipsed by a Rod Stewart concert in Rio.
Yeah, although Woodstock, which officially ran on August 15th, 16th, 17th, 1969, was neither the first nor last major festival concert. The fact that the youth of America were able to congregate in one place with no violence during one of the most turbulent years of the decade gave birth to the notion of the Woodstock Nation and gave a voice and face to the hippie ideal.
It was also, in a way, you know, you'd had... So the Beatles with the Hard Day's Night and helped create that idea of catching music in music video form. And Woodstock helped propel that forward as well.
I guess so.
You know, so that was all, it was kind of the emerging of all different things.
Yep.
And you're right, we said earlier, the movie helped make the event last and become what it became.
Yep. We had a lengthy conversation about it, and a couple of people noted, and I have to point this out, that the stories I was telling about The Who being on stage and Pete Townsend smashing guitar and somebody saying to Jimi Hendrix, hey, that guy's stealing your act. Apparently all that happened at the Monterey Pop Festival, and Jimmy decided to set his guitar on fire to upstage Pete Townsend.
Oh,
so
when did they?
I don't know.
When did they finally call Marvin Berry?
That was years before. That was years before.
Was it?
Yeah. Way before, in the '50s, man.
Oh, Marv. Okay, I thought you were talking about how
Marvin Berry.
Yeah.
All right, but anyhow, that's a huge deal. It's a huge milestone. 50 years ago.
Wow.
That Woodstock took.
Chuck, it's Marvin. Marvin Berry, you know that new sound you're looking for? Well, listen to this.
And rock and roll was born at that moment.
They also cut out the clip, though, because it's a more family. He goes, and you should probably start farting in hookers' mouths.
Yeah.
November 5th, 1955.
That's where he picked it up. Yes, but August 15th, 1969 is when Woodstock took place.
Watch the movie if you get a chance. Yep.
All right, we're going to take a break, and Case, what do you want me to give away?
Let's do a music thing, since we're in music news.
I like it. Marissa is going to be at a special campfire-style acoustic performance with Cage the Elephant before the doors open for their show with Beck on Wednesday, August 21st, BB&T Pavilion. You can be there and be a part of it. So we'll take caller number 7 at 215-263-WMMR. It's part of MMR's Rock Residency. And you can visit WMMR.com for details, including special ticket prices starting at just $19.33. So caller 7, you get it. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
When MMR's Jackson broadcasts live backstage, it's for the likes of Metallica, Guns N' Roses, and MMRBQ.
So true, Jackson.
Once a year, he goes from backstage to the backyard. Enter now for Jackson to bring the party to your place Friday, August 30th. Enjoy your 4 hours of fame as Jackson broadcasts live. And he'll probably use your bathroom. Hatfield Meats fully supplies the grill. The MM Army stocks the fridge with cold brews and brings the music to prime your weekend. Go to WMMR.com and tell us why your backyard rocks. Include a photo so we know what we're getting into. Jackson's Backyard Broadcast.
Presented by Hatfield Meats. Look for their bold new bacon packaging. Simply Hatfield.
And 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Sorry, I didn't know it ended there. He says something at the end. I don't know. It's new music from KG Elephant on 93.3 WMMR. The song is called Social Cues.
I dig that sort of retro.
Retro Fresh.
Retro Fresh.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new supermarket.
Yeah. I like those guys. Yeah, they're very cool. And Marissa's doing a... there's a special performance that she's going to be at, and we just gave away tickets to it, and we'll have your chance to win some more of those tomorrow. So it should be pretty cool. We got a lot going on tomorrow. But first, let's talk about today. Thank you to John Roy.
Hey!
Yay! Nice guy. He's going to be at Helium Comedy Club. Very, very funny, by the way. And the show starts at 8. It is his only appearance in town and his first appearance in town. So go make him feel welcome. And get some laughs. Have a good time. Should be pretty cool. Also, today is our Belly Flop Championship.
It's finally here. We had to delay it once.
We did.
Postponed it.
Kind of glad we did.
It would have been a freaking nightmare.
It's, the rain, but also doing it July, it's always, God, so hot and really just the sun's usually beating down and it's like, oh, God, let's get this over with. And it's fun. It's a great time, but it's sweltering. I think it's going to be great today. It's going to be like mid-80s. We're going to have an overcast. Maybe, you know, it might even be partly cloudy by the time we get it going.
Yeah. I'm so down with that.
It'll be very enjoyable.
And the bar out there is awesome, by the way. Two bars.
Yeah, you can join us because it's free, and you just have to be at least 21. So head to Valley Forge Casino Resort. Look for the Valley Beachside, Beach Poolside Club. Pretty easy to find. And we'll be there. Come early and get yourself a spot, and we'll try to get started as close to 6 o'clock as we can do it. So it should be a really, really good time tonight. We are looking forward to it. We should do the letter of the day, too. Hey! And Pierre's here. That's perfect timing. Excellent. I'm going to fire this up, Pierre. Ready?
Yo-ho.
All right, here we go.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
Now, the Daily Letter.
And the Preston and Steve Show is brought to you today by the letter...
D is in catnip.
All right, and we have one more to go. C is in catnip. We have an indoor-outdoor folding tournament ping pong table by Corneo, and it includes a cover, an outdoor playing set, and it's courtesy of Royal Billiard and Recreation.
You got to freaking love it.
Make sure that you're ready to kick for kicking off the season ahead, and Royal Billiard and Recreation has everything you need to make your place the place to watch the game. Royal Billiard and Recreation, your ultimate game room store. And they've been selling fun for over 30 years. You can visit royalbilliard.com for more information.
I love when you give up in the middle of the set. Then you rally and you do your job like the professional you are and you finish strong. But you can hear it. And I'm amused by it.
Well, you know, I can give a little goose to the sell there, Preston, is that, you know, on 309, if you go down 309, you pass by a couple of my favorite places. You got Worldwide Stereo, Sequoia Outback, and then right up the road from that is Royal Billiard.
Yep.
So it's my personal Valhalla.
Nice.
That's 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, it is.
Easy as ABC.
How are you?
Do, re, mi. Me, me, me. That's what I can always see.
Yeah.
Smattering of applause.
Thank you.
Hi.
Next show at 11.
How are you doing?
Oh, I wanted to comment.
That's nice. I'm glad to hear that. I asked how you were doing. I sometimes ask you a question and then you just... Matt Cord does it too. I will ask
Matt's
a direct question
worst.
And it, really? It will be... something completely separate.
Swordfish.
I just asked how you're doing.
It's cloudy out.
Exactly.
No, well, I'm fine, thank you.
All right, cool.
But I wanted, before I spaced it out, I wanted to mention, because you guys were talking about the festivals, and today's the anniversary of the first day of Woodstock, and tomorrow at noon we're going to do a giant thing, and we have had, as you mentioned, smatterings of Woodstock stuff from 94, 99, and the original, and that will continue. I've got this wicked book and a remastering of all the CDs and way more that was on the original to give away tomorrow, which is going to be cool, I think on vinyl too. But when you were talking about the individual artist appearances, I think it was, in that category. And you, Beach Boys in Philly, what number was
that? Yeah, I think it was like number 7 or 8 or something, or eight or nine, somewhere okay. in that range.
Attendance you're talking about, right?
Sure. July 4th, 1985.
Yes.
That was an MMR concert event, and I hosted it. I introduced the Beach Boys.
Wow. That is so cool.
On Wikipedia. Yeah, Nick, count how many down that is. 1, 2.
8.
Yeah, that is the 8th largest free concert in history.
Wow.
In the world.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was packed.
So that was a week and a half before Live Aid.
Yes.
It was 85. It was July 4th, 1985. And then Live Aid it was right around the corner.
It was our practice session for how we were going to cover it, because we were broadcasting all day from it. It was the July 4th spectacle.
Wow.
And so they had a stage up, not the Live Aid stage, obviously, but the stage they put up there every year for the fireworks. And the headliner was going to be the Beach Boys. And in late afternoon, I introduced them. And, you know, it was really quite spectacular. But we were all, you know, that we had, let's go to John over here. Let's go to Honey over here. So we were kind of practicing what we would be like the next week. And what was particularly wild is they brought Jimmy Page out as a guest player.
Wow.
The Beach Boys brought Jimmy Page out.
Do you recall what song he joined them on?
It was Stairway to Heaven.
I have no idea. Beach Boys played Stairway to Heaven.
I have no idea. But seeing, it was just sort of, it was sort of like seeing a tulip.
In a pile of Crisco.
I don't know. It just didn't quite make sense. Now, the other thing that was interesting, walking out on the stage with a wireless microphone that I then handed to Mike Love, the singer of the Beach Boys, as soon as I introduced them, what was interesting is that on all the monitors, in giant duct tape with giant Sharpie writing on it, it said, Philadelphia. Philadelphia.
Yeah, yeah.
Then there's like 10 monitors. Now, I certainly understand that in an indoor arena where most of them look the same.
Yeah, guys.
But keep in mind, their view straight out was of the parkway and of City Hall and of a most unique skyline that was not difficult to mistake for Cleveland or Phoenix or Oklahoma City.
Just to remind them.
Yeah. But just to make sure, on each monitor, it said Philadelphia, so they could look down and say, hey, we're in Philadelphia. Anyway, it was a pretty cool moment.
Well, that is
Mike
pretty cool.
Mike Love is a well-known douchebag, so he probably needed a reminder. But I've heard anyway.
I've heard he's not the most pleasant, but there it is.
Was Brian Wilson a part of the show?
No.
Okay.
Brian Wilson. I mean, Brian toured with them in those days very sporadically. There was a 50th anniversary Beach Boys reunion a couple of years ago with Brian Wilson, and that was brilliant. That was amazing.
Wow. Cool. So you'll continue?
I'll continue.
The memories today?
I will.
50 years ago today. Wow.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, MMR, as I like to say, was the only station that had a... who knew there was a program like you'd get if you go to a play or something?
Yeah.
There was, maybe they made five of them. I don't know. But we got one of them. And damn if there's not an ad for MMR in the Woodstock program. We have it framed here. We'll take pictures of that, put it up tomorrow. And, you know, we have two commercials, which I think we played both of them on your show before, that are, one is a more straight-laced one, and one is a hippie, more hippie, come, like, hang with Janice in the park, as if that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But, so, that's really cool.
Nice.
And so, we'll have fun with that. We'll also have... tickets for Alice Cooper and Hailstorm. Again, that's going to be on Friday. Tickets for Lenny Kravitz. And we just got tickets for the Struts. Was it you guys that announced the Fillmore show? Saturday, December 28th, right after Christmas, they're coming. And that goes on sale tomorrow at 10 a.m. So we've got Struts, Lenny Kravitz, Alice Cooper tickets, a workforce block of the Struts, a workforce block of Alice Cooper, and Hailstorm to get us ready.
Nice. That's going to be awesome. Excellent. Thank you, Pierre. And I want to thank our sponsors, Preston and Steve Show, brought to you today by Dunkin'. Fuel your day with a freshly brewed iced coffee from Dunkin'. Dunkin' iced coffee is made just for you. Any way you like it, stop by Dunkin' today. America runs on Dunkin'. Also brought to you by French Creek Outfitters in Phoenixville with everything you need for the great outdoors. French Creek Outfitters, why take a chance with anybody else? Also, Monster Mania Con, August 16th to the 18th at the Crown Plaza in Cherry Hill. So that starts tomorrow. Details at monstermania.net. Now, we're going to wrap up the week in a pretty fine fashion. Tomorrow, we're going to speak to comedian Jim Gaffigan. We'll have Marlon Wayans in our studio. And also in our studio, and don't try to come by here because you won't get even close to him, John Travolta is going to be
great here. Day in the cookie cutter!
That's correct, yes.
What?
Yeah. John Travolta will be right where you are tomorrow morning.
The guy from...
Greece.
No.
Saturday Night Fever? Look who's talking.
No, the TV show.
Wild Hogs?
Travolta, no.
Welcome back, Cotter.
That's the guy.
What character did he play, Vinny?
Barbarino.
Barbarino.
Yeah, that's right.
Cha-ching.
That'll be it tomorrow. So
any questions? I'm good on that.
And we're going to recap the...
Pulp Fiction.
We're also going to recap the Belly Flop Championship tonight. So come out and see us for that. All right, that's it. We're done. Rage on and have a great day. And we'll see you tomorrow, gang. Bye-bye.
The Preston and Steve love you, hate you line.
Look, Bess, when you get this story, don't feed the seagulls. Don't feed the seagulls.
Next message.
Charlie man, you're coming to town. Charlie man, you're coming to town. Charlie man, you're coming to town.
Next message.
La-da-da-da-da. Oh, please. Why?
The Preston and Steve Love You, Hate You line.
Call 484-434-1333.
MMR rocks.
Brought to you by DellToyota.com and DellChevrolet.com.
Jack, sell them for less.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.